This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Eating well for diabetes. Coma bien para controlar la diabetes. 59 seconds. Comiendo una dieta saludable y bien balanceada es una parte esencial para controlar la diabetes. Las siguientes son unas guías recomendadas por los médicos para la diabetes y aún para todos. Coma una dieta alta en fibra y baja en grasas. Coma muchas frutas, verduras y granos enteros. Consuma menos de carne, comiendo solo porciones pequeñas. Prepare sus comidas en la parrilla, en el horno, a vapor o en el microondas usando poca o nada de grasas. Evite las comidas preparadas, al igual que salsas grasosas, aderezos y productos grasosos lácteos. Limite los postres y otras comidas que contienen azúcar refinada. Si es posible, evite totalmente los refrescos y el alcohol. Nos importa su bienestar. Un mensaje del Health Education Training Center y el East Texas AHEC.
This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free, KPFT, Houston.
It was something you made. Now- smoking cigarettes. The altar boy is gone. I'm on my own disguise. Change the way I talk. Betrayed that dreaming child who never crawled before me.
Contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible. possible due to age, job, or frame of mind. But remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
Hello, Houston, Galveston, and the world. This is the Saturday, November 26th edition of After Hours. Shut up out in the lobby. It's too hot in here to close the doors.
And you are?
My name is Chris Harrison. I'm the bitch of the group.
And I'm Jimmy Carper. I am the other co-executive director, trying not to be a bitch tonight.
Oh.
We'll see how it goes.
The night is young.
Oh, and
the night is young and the guests aren't here. So.
And, yes, and we're not that beautiful. So, the music that we heard.
We started off with Whitney McCray.
Local Woman.
And that song was Hollow.
And one of the reasons I played it, other than she makes good music, is that she will be appearing at Chances tomorrow night, Saturday night, 9 o'clock-ish, whenever. And so you can see her live and probably pick up a CD.
And after that was Daniel Link and the song Altar Boy.
From his relatively new CD. You know, Daniel sent us about a half a dozen of those CDs to give away on the show. He wanted to do it for the membership drive, but they didn't get to me in time.
Oh.
So we'll probably be giving those out as Christmas presents during the month of December.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Won't that be nice?
Yes, we can find people to actually call in.
Yeah, actually, we might be able to send one or two to some of the people who pledged.
Yeah. Well,
that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, let's pay back the people who actually...
Yeah, speaking of music, the Queer Music Heritage is coming on this Monday. That would be the fourth Monday, right? November 28th. Works for me. And J.D. Doyle is featuring transgender artists. In fact, he's featuring transgendered artists on two shows. He's going to be doing on the fourth Monday, November the 28th. The show will feature interviews with Veronica Klaus, Jessica Xavier, who we've interviewed on this show with Sarah De Palma, ouch, and Georgie Jessup, with lots of music and some unreleased material. And, as usual, his website version of the show will be an expanded version with more of the interviews and songs that just wouldn't fit into 58 minutes.
And the FCC won't allow you to hear.
Well, that might be, too. And the following week, on December 5th, is a bonus edition of the Queer Music Heritage, packed full with music by all transgendered artists in a variety of genres. So, check that out. And, of course, you can always go to his website, queermusicheritage.com, I believe it is.
I think it's org.
Org? I'll try them both. Other things coming up on Saturday night, November the 26th. It's showtime. Girls for All Seasons. It's happening from 7 to 9 p.m. at Keys West, located at 817 West Dallas. And this is done by the COPA. The Calendar Girls, and one guy will be present. Girls for All Seasons and a guy, too, benefiting the Calendar Fund for 2006. Come out and see the fabulous talent that made Houston proud.
Why am I so scared that's going to be a cheesy knockoff of Grease 2?
I don't know. Anyway, then, Sunday, coming up. Yes, it's the enthronement video party for ICOH, the Imperial Court of Houston, the Space City Empire. That's happening at Meteor at 2306 Genesee. on the 27th from 2 p.m. to 4:30. Everyone is welcome to come watch the video of this year's enthronement if you didn't get to go, and if you did get to go and want to see well, there's some really good entertainment in that.
Yeah.
I was amazed, and by the way, I'm in it.
Well, that just ruined the production value.
Hey, no, a group of four of us did lip sync to a Kinsey Six number. And I knew all the words. So there. And then after that, you can all go down to Mary's for the Miss Montrose contest.
I'm glad you finished that, because I started to go, you can go down to...
Yes, Ginger Vitus is giving up her crown as Miss Montrose, and there will be a new Miss Montrose for 2006-2007 contest. And the categories are presentation, talent, and Q&A. That's Q&A, not T&A. Registration's at 5 p.m. The contest is at 6. That's at Mary's, naturally. This is a direct benefit to the Lexi Bowen Community Fund. And in between, from 4 to 9 p.m., ICOH will be bartending at EJ's. So stop by for a refreshing beverage. And your tips to the bartender goes to ICOH. And I don't know who's going to be doing the bartending there. They usually have undecided.
No.
Then we
tender to be named later.
Yes. Then Thursday is December 1st, and of course that is World AIDS Day. And Chris is going to let you know what's going on there.
Some of the events coming up for World AIDS Day on ICOH, the Space City Empire hosts an evening of remembrance. Recognition readings at 7:30. There will be a tree of remembrance that will be there. They ask you to bring an ornament to hang in memory of family and friends, followed by the memory show with performances in memory of, and they'll be benefiting the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum.
Yes.
Oh. EJ's is 2517 Ralph at Westheimer. The Montrose Counseling Center will be doing a red ribbon chain of remembrance as a colorful art project to honor those affected and infected with HIV/AIDS. Each link on the chain will be dedicated in memory of a loved one or friend. That will be done in the lobby. It will be on display in the lobby of MCC during the week of World AIDS Day, which is next week. On Thursday, December 1st, there will be a candlelight observance in the MCC parking lot at 701 Richmond Avenue. And that will start at 6 p.m. Candles will be provided. The observance will be marked with words of encouragement and hope about what we're dealing with in the terms of the epidemic and honoring those lives who have been touched by the face of HIV/AIDS. There will also be a moment of silence held in remembrance of those who have passed. And this is free and open to the public. Excuse me, my asthma has been kicking me in this past week. MCC will also be providing free and anonymous OraQuick HIV testing, as well as HIV/AIDS education and awareness on November 30th, which is Wednesday, and Thursday, December the 1st, and that'll be over at the Disco Kroger, 3300 Montrose, from noon to 5 p.m. Testing is on a first-come, first-served basis. The OraQuick HIV test is a 20-minute result. It is no blood,
mm-hmm.
no sticking with needles. It's a kind of a plastic swab that you rub across your gums,
mm-hmm.
your top and your lower gums, and in 20 minutes you get your results. For more information on any of the events at the Montrose Counseling Center or I'll wait until I do this other part here.
Yes.
I forgot there was the big flyer. Montrose Counseling Center is also doing a thing, Coping Through the Holidays. It's that time of year where we are bombarded with holiday stressors, not the least of which the usual suspects, time management, finances, and dealing with the family. All while images of happiness and what we're supposed to look like appear everywhere you turn, from the media in both advertising and storylines, as well as greeting cards or the company party. For many in the GLBT community, the holidays are even more stressful, especially for those not accepted by their families, or for those who are not out or those who may be expected to be, who may not be accepted by their loved ones. Take two. Mm-hmm. For those who may be accepted by their loved ones, but their partner is excluded. Most of our holidays don't look like a Norman Rockwell painting, says Marilyn Barnes, LCSW, staff therapist at the Montrose Counseling Center. For many people, the holidays may trigger sadness, especially for anyone who has experienced a loss in the past year. And, you know, this has been one of those crazy years of...
Sure has.
You know, with having to deal with what's going on with ourselves, mm-hmm. you know, New Orleans and the hurricane
right.
stressors and all that. This is one of those years that everyone could use a little help. And what they urge...
I know, that just goes on.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm trying to get to what it is right now. What they do is the Montrose Counseling Center can help you with mental health, anti-violence, HIV, substance use problems, case management, and such. It's not a particular seminar they're hosting.
Mm-hmm.
If you do need help and you are...
As an emergency, like it's hard to cope.
Yeah. If it's an emergency and you need help desperately, first place is call the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard.
You bet. 529-3211.
Yeah,
713-529-3211.
And if it's an emergency, if not, and you can, if you think you can hold off till normal business hours, contact the Montrose Counseling Center at 713-529-0034. And they're over at 701 Richmond.
0034?
I'm sorry, 7737.
37.
Yeah, 0037. Extension ended in 4.
Okay.
713-529-0037.
I thought so. I remember that number from my old switchboard days.
Yes. You can always check them out on the World Wide Web at montrosecounselingcenter.org. Also part of AIDS... World AIDS Day, you have several opportunities to see the AIDS Memorial Quilt.
Mm-hmm.
It will be, all these are free admission. From November 28th to December 2nd, you can see it at the University of Houston Clear Lake, 2700 Bay Area Boulevard. And that's Thursday from 10 to 7, Friday 8 to noon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Monday through Thursday is 10 to 7, Friday is 8 to noon. November 30th through December 1st, you can see it at the University Center Arbor and UC World Affairs Lounge. And that's at 282 University Center. And that's the University of Houston campus. They don't tell you University of Houston. And November 30th through December 1st at Rice Memorial Center, Grand Hall, 6100 Main Street, on that.
Cool.
They don't list the times on that. And, I mean, last year when the AIDS quilt came in, I got a chance to go down and see that. And
it's pretty sobering.
It is. It's one of those things just walking around. And when I did it... doing it the reporter style,
mm-hmm.
you know, one thing I did is I went through and I talked with some of the people and walked around with the tape recorder and just looked at the panels and pulled out elements. Instead of writing notes there, mm-hmm. just sitting there going, you know, this was the person's name, and here's the thing that jumped out at me from this.
Yeah.
You know, a certain saying or a certain way they wrote something. I remember there was one person's panel that had the word daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I guess it was a Leather and Levi daddy because
yeah.
the word daddy was made out of torn parts of jeans.
Mm-hmm.
The pockets made the D's,
oh.
zipper made the A and the Y.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it was going through and just making those little notes. And it was just something walking through there and seeing this, you know, a person's life kind of compressed down to a 2x3 panel.
Yes. Actually, it's
3x6. 3x6. So, it's something if you have the opportunity to go see, even if you don't get to part of the unfurling ceremonies,
mm-hmm.
if you just go to walk through and see these panels and think, you know, I mean... They're not going to be able to show a lot of them. They don't show a lot of them in each one of these locations.
Right.
They can't show the whole quilt
anymore.
No,
it's impossible. So usually when they send things to a city, they try to incorporate as many people from that city.
Yeah, which may be a little difficult. Even though we say it's a 3x6 panel, mm-hmm. there's...
It's a little bit easier for Houston, though, because we used to have the NAMES Project here, and we had one of two people authorized to sew the big panels together.
Oh.
So we do have a lot of Houston
the full panels.
Mm. Yeah, Houston area panels. And the other thing that's going on December 1st is on Time Warner, Access 17, Access Houston. There's going to be live programming from noon until, I think, 3 o'clock for World AIDS Day, and I'm going to be on it, as a matter of fact. Smiley Maddox is putting this together. He's got a vast array of people, including Hatch, I believe, who's going to be a participant in this.
Yes.
And I will be coming on the air around 1 o'clock. And talking about about the long-term survivors, a little history, what it was like in the early days, and what it's like to be a long-term survivor.
A couple other things I just found on here.
Oh.
I didn't realize there was two columns.
Oh, okay.
There will also be parts of the AIDS Memorial Quilt on December 1st, presented by J.P. Morgan Chase,
mm-hmm.
which will be at the J.P. Morgan Chase Community Affairs at 717 Travis, second floor.
Yeah.
There will be a luncheon honoring H. Joe Nelson III, presented by Wells Fargo Bank, benefiting AIDS Foundation Houston, at 11:30 a.m. at the Houstonian Hotel. That's at 111 North Post Oak Lane. For more information, call 713-623-6729. There's also going to be, on December 1st, a Lighting the Way Illumination Project 2005, presented by Dominic Walsh Dance Center, Hope Stone Dance, and Guest. Benefits the Baylor International Pediatric AIDS Initiative and Bering Omega Community Services.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 8 p.m. at the Hobby Center for Performing Arts, Zilka Hall.
Oh, yeah, Zilka Hall.
So you can go to thehobbycenter.org for more information. And for the transgender community, there is a December 1st Positive Transitions Resource Center grand opening for HIV-positive and at-risk transgendered people.
Wow.
From 2 to 5 p.m., it's a free event, and that's with the Houston Area Community Services
mm-hmm.
and Joseph Hines Clinic at 1710 West 25th Street. For more information, you can go to transhouston.com/WAD.
Cool. Then, coming up next weekend, some of the things happening on December the 3rd, next Saturday night from 7 p.m. on, a little show called A Kinky Christmas, which is happening at Keys West, 817 Dallas. And this is being put on by the Third Coast family, and they proudly present a leather and fetish themed show, which is a direct benefit for the Lexi Bowen Fund. That's kind of, you know, a little different, a little something-something. Sunday, December the 4th, Keith Vivial, Chairman of Board of Directors of ICOH, will be hosting a show through ICOH, Maintaining the Magic, which is a direct benefit for GCAM, Gulf uh-huh. Coast Archive and Museum. That's going to happen at Keys West, 7 p.m. sharp. So, hey, Saturday and Sunday night. Keys West is the place to be. The theme of the performances will be twofold. A magic fantasy theme, and would also love for the evening for people to do a number that has special meaning to them and say briefly what the significance is for that particular number. He's focusing on history. And I've been told that the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum people will be there with kind of a few little things to talk about and tell the audience what they are and the significance of them and why.
Yeah.
So, sort of give you a little idea of why we need a museum and keep our history. Then, December the 7th. Yes, that's Pearl Harbor Day. Jukebox Wednesday. Happy Pearl Harbor Day. If you can call it that, that would be the hosts by Grand Duke Craig Farrell and Grand Duchess Judy Reeves. That's happening at Mary's, naturally, at 9 p.m. And that's a direct benefit for the Lazarus House. Then, Didi and Marco, I want to plug this a little early because this is happening December the 9th. At EJ's, Didi DeMarco, who was candidate for Empress 22 of the Empire of the Sovereign, Royal Sovereign Imperial Court of the Single Star, Houston. And that is the candidate for Empress show. It will be benefiting Coronation 22, the Montrose Women's Clinic, Women's Program, and the Assistance Fund Insurance Program. The theme is Just Because, so any music will be appropriate. Then, some other things we can talk about later. Paul is here, our intrepid photographer. And before we get to Paul, we got a message.
Oh, yeah.
And caller?
I saw this flash on the screen.
Yes.
Daniel called and said he loves our show, especially the opening. I'm gay, too, and out of the closet. Happy
all
Thanksgiving
right.
to all.
Thank you, Daniel, for listening.
As we say in our community, Daniel, hopefully you've got your bird stuffed and the giblet gravy was lovely.
Ooh. Paul is here, and he's got he's a project that he's has done out of love and... I don't know, just taking a lot of time and energy for the good of the community. So I'd like to invite him to sit here and talk about it. How you doing?
Just fine.
What has CL Graphics been up to?
Well, I've been collecting some very fine images of young men enjoying life and celebrating being young and full of energy. And I'm using this to help support GCAM and Bering Omega and the Montrose Counseling Center, among others. And so I'm putting out a calendar with a promo for each of these special groups.
And beautiful photography.
Yes, some very fine young men.
We're not talking naked. There's no nudity here.
No, and the Pride Committee.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got the pride, show it and spread it around.
There you go.
So these will be coming out here in a few days for people to enjoy and put your money where your mouth is about supporting the organization and your community.
There you go. And how can I get them?
They will be on seaowl.net.
How do you spell that?
S-E-E-O-W-L. See the owl and catch it with the net, because you don't ever want to grab one with your bare hands.
Ooh.
They have claws and attitude,
yeah.
Just like a queen. You don't touch without permission.
Oh, I choke on the big ones. Okay.
Yes, it's taken a while for some of these young guys. Dancers with fine things and... a little touch of leather.
Oh, yeah. There's a guy who hangs out at After Hours every now and then.
Yes. And a few from South Beach and some glamour.
Yep.
Some fine muscles. April's reminding everyone it's jungle, another support function. So a little bit of everything to keep a sample for everybody.
There you go. Beautiful men from Houston that you can hang in your kitchen and your mom can see it.
Moms, yes.
Yes, exactly.
It is that time of year.
Seaowl.net. Order yours today. How about a piece of music?
Okay.
What do we got?
Well, I thought we'd stick a little with the World AIDS theme here. Well, actually, let me do this. Should we do Thanksgiving first, or should we do World AIDS stuff?
Probably Thanksgiving.
Okay. We're going to hit you with a little quick...
excuse me.
Touch of humor.
Oh. Oh, is this? Oh, I know what this is.
Yeah, a little 30-second little Thanksgiving tribute.
Gotcha.
Actually, no, I'm not going to do that because it's not going to flow right, I don't think. We'll wait for the comedy later. As I keep shifting gears in midstream. With World AIDS Day, I figure I'll just pull out an artist who is no longer with us from that.
Okay.
And Michael Callen with the Flirtations, and this is a song that... One of the songs I really enjoyed. One of their, I guess, I hope it's one of their original ones. Most they do a lot of covers and takes there. And Something Inside So Strong.
It's not theirs. It's a
it's
cover.
Not theirs. It's a cover.
That was written and performed by an African man living in London, Labi Saffrey.
But you know, it's still a good song. It's you know. It speaks a lot there, so we're going to do that and try and figure out what we're going to do. If anyone's driving by Hollywood Cafe, yell out the window and tell them, hey, where are you?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll be right back. It's After Hours.
The higher you build your barriers, the taller I become, the farther you take my rights away, the faster I will run. You can deny me, you can decide to turn your face away.
Something inside so strong, I know that I can make it. Though you're doing me wrong, so wrong, you thought that my pride was gone. Oh no,
oh no,
there's something inside so strong.
Something inside so strong.
Oh no, something inside so strong. Doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no,
oh, 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 oh,
there's something inside so strong.
Something inside so strong.
Oh no, something inside so strong.
Brothers and sisters, when they insist we're just not good enough.
Good enough.
We're gonna do it anyway.
Say,
we're gonna do it anyway.
Say,
we're gonna do it anyway. Cause there's
something inside so strong.
Oh,
I know that I can make it. Though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone.
Strong. Boy, this is the 90s, and it's definitely in to be out in the 90s as a gay person, isn't it? Yeah, it's great. I'm very happy. I've been in a relationship to a man that I'm very much in love with for the last 5 years of my life, and I'm very proud of that, to sustain that relationship. And it's so important, I think, and I think it's important to show our relationships. So I wear the wedding band of my partner. Of course, the diamonds are really small in it because I don't swallow. But, no. No. See, I was raised Catholic, and we don't believe in that sort of thing, okay? It's you Baptists that get the big diamonds. You know who you are. Yeah. Yeah, you know. The little Miss Tammy Faye Bakers of the world out there, you know who you are. It's the man that I'm in love with, and you'll get a chance to meet him in a minute. He's a co-star on the show. And I think the toughest time in our relationship came right after we met about 5 years ago. I actually found out that I was HIV positive and that I had AIDS. And I was so shocked when I found that out that I was positive, because people always told me I was so negative, you know, and you just don't think about it, you know? But, oh my God, and I was so sick. I was in the hospital. It was terrible. And I was not a good hospital patient. I kept trying to get up and out of bed. And finally the nurse said, "Look, Kevin, you need to stay in bed. We'll get you everything that you need. Just press the button." It's like staying at the Hilton. I was like, yeah, right. Excuse me, but the last time I stayed at the Hilton, nobody snuck into my room at 2 o'clock in the morning and gave me an enema, okay? Okay, maybe once, but that's a whole nother show, okay? But it is. It's scary. It really is. And it's just amazing. And all the new drugs that are out for AIDS today, it just really is amazing. It's amazing that people, we can really say that we're living with AIDS and not dying from it. And I'm very proud to say that. And I know, yes, yes. I know in my heart that AIDS will not be the thing that kills me. I just know it. In fact, you know, I'm taking all the drugs that are available. There's so many drugs that I have to take, there's not room in my makeup bag for anything else. Actually, it's like, should I take the AZT or the eyeliner pencil? What would Michael Jackson do? Eyeliner pencil, let's go. Hey. It's true, but I just got back from the doctor last week for my monthly checkup, and my T-cells have doubled, which is very exciting. Yeah, thank you, thank you. Yeah, thanks. I was excited. Now I have two of them, you know, and which I've named Thelma and Louise. Two bitches that won't give up, you know. I'm sure if there's such a thing as a lesbian T-cell, I've got it. It's just hanging on for dear life, basically. But no, it's hard telling people that you're gay. It's even harder telling people that you're HIV positive. I mean, Hallmark does not make a card for this occasion. I'm here to tell you, man. But one of the nice things about being HIV positive, your doctor gives you the best drugs. I'm just not sure if he should be selling them to me out the back of his trunk or not. But and I think it's important for us to make those arrangements just in case anything does happen to us. It doesn't have to be AIDS or whatever. And I've had all those talks with the family and the friends. And I told my partner, I said, "Sweetheart, if anything ever does happen to me, please don't make an AIDS panel quilt out of my name." And I have a lot of respect for the AIDS panel project. I mean, a lot of people have worked hard on that. But you guys know me by now. Don't you think I'm more of a throw pillow kind of person? A little tasteful fringe around it or something, I don't know. And I don't want one of those cutesy memorial services too, where everybody lets off a helium balloon, says a poem. That's corny. And that eternal flame thing, that's been done before. I'm pretty sure about that. Now, I think for me, I just want like an eternally smoldering cigarette in an ashtray in some corner over there. Yeah, that's more me. That's more me. But I have made those arrangements, and I think if something does happen, I want to be cremated, which Catholics don't believe in cremation. But I tell you, in my family, a funeral is just another reason to have a major buffet, basically, is all it is. I mean, there is so much food, and in my family, you have to be laid out in the family foyer in your coffin. I'm thinking, man, there's not going to be enough room for all the food. They'll have me laying in my coffin holding a bowl of potato salad, for God's sakes, you know? They'll be passing by, "Doesn't Kevin look great? Is that Aunt Gertrude's potato salad right there?" Oh, my family is so white trash people, you just wouldn't believe it. So I've made those decisions, and I'm going to stick with them, by God.
You guys have been a great crowd. My name is Kevin May. Thanks for coming out and supporting the Gay Comedy Jam. Enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you very much.
A little taste of some of the people who we've lost to HIV/AIDS crisis. Start off with Michael Callen with his group The Flirtations, "Something Inside So Strong." And that last one, you know, I've been talking about him for a while here lately. Kevin May was a stand-up comedian here in Houston, part of the Gay Comedy Jam with his partner Scott Kennedy, who we lost several years ago. We lost Kevin to HIV/AIDS. And it was, you know, it's kind of a weird way of saying, you know, of how new I am to the GLBT community, that his is the only memorial service for AIDS I've gone to. I think it was also one of the weirder ones because it was held in a comedy club. So
that's interesting.
You know, well, yeah. A 2-drink minimum there for your memorial service was a little something different. But with World AIDS Day coming up, it's something, you know, we can't forget, we can't just ignore. It's not over. It's
not by a long shot.
Yeah, the elephant standing in the corner may be a little more translucent, but, you know, he's not completely disappeared. This is normally the hatch segment of After Hours, but...
And now for something completely different.
We're missing some hatchlings, I'm afraid, tonight.
Mm.
Which hatch didn't meet this this Friday for reasons for Thanksgiving and all that.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, we've got... Who do we got in there?
Merlin.
Scott.
Brendan.
So, a never hatcher,
hello,
former hatcher,
and current facilitator.
Yeah, I'm a current facilitator, and I'm on the board.
One of those who watch the nest.
Never mind.
Behave, even if they're not here, we have to behave.
We do.
Why? We never do when
they never
when
behave. They, what are you talking about?
They never behave. Mm. What are we talking?
Not much has changed.
As a dream.
But, something interesting. One of the old friends of the Hatch program, Jeffrey, you may remember Jeffrey from last year.
He was okay, yeah, I think so.
He would come on, and he was very passionate about HIV, AIDS.
Oh, yeah, yes.
And also the religious aspect.
He was the one who broke the story on the
sure is.
The 800.
Yeah, he got the award, the Lambda Legal Defense, I believe, or some sort of award like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really impressive. He's going to represent Hatch on the World AIDS Day event.
On Channel 17.
On Channel 17, that's right.
For those of you who live inside the city limits of Houston, Channel 17 out where I live is a jewelry shopping channel.
Oh, nice.
Ooh. Well, that's kind of related.
I actually clicked that one off. That's a channel that's blocked.
Mm. I wish I still had cable.
Or a television.
I have a television. I do.
Oh, it's the week for TV?
He has a scrying dish.
I used to have a scrying dish. You see, when my original TV blew up, I essentially had the world's largest scrying mirror.
Scrying?
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know.
It's like spying for witches.
It's like seeing into the future, scrying. Never mind. This is, yeah. It's a big black mirror that you use for seeing into the future.
It's like remote like viewing.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As
opposed to his usual activity, which is like remote thinking.
Well, if anybody here should know about remote thinking.
Yeah.
Be me.
Okay, I know Jimmy went over a couple of topics there, but I wasn't paying attention.
Well, one of the interesting things is Scott used to be in Hatch.
In Hatch, yeah.
Many years ago, from what I understand.
Yeah, actually about like 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, he just turned 30 the other day.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
No, the other week.
Okay.
Two, three
weeks ago, mm-hmm. Whatever.
And you were actually one of the ones partly responsible for Hatch having a segment on After Hours.
Well, yeah. It was something, I guess, I'd been coming around up here for a little while. It's always nice because, you know, KPFT sort of seems to have this family of people that, you know, the new people always get dragged in by the current people. And then somehow, you know, we just sort of stick around for a little while. And,
hell, look at me.
Yeah.
To give you an idea of how long it was, I think Jimmy and I were actually sitting down and eating at Charlie's.
Oh, I remember.
Which used
Charlie's.
To be next door to Chances.
Yeah.
Before Nico decided it was too much to keep running. And, we kind of kicked around the idea of, well, what if we had a hatch show? And, well, we all know how easy it is to get a hold of Jimmy on the phone. So after about a year of phone tag, we finally kind of got things running, and I started making announcements at Hatch meetings, you know, that we were going to do a thing for KPFT to try and get the queer youth a voice, once a month. And we started out with basically like a little 30-minute segment where we would just kind of talk about issues that were going on in the news. We'd kind of, like, peruse the newspapers. And Chris would go surf the web looking for, like, you know, hot topics that, you know, weren't necessarily hot topics. But,
well, that was, you know. That was back in the day with, you know, the Rip and Read news. That, you know, well, 10 years ago, I still didn't even have a segment there. I was the cub reporter for the News and Views segment. So, you know, we just found interesting little tidbits out there in cyberspace and threw them at everyone to say, hey, we can talk about this. You know, here's a couple of things. Because, you know, in the beginnings of Hatch, it was, you know, came in, you didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
That's
true.
Yeah.
It's still that way. You know,
it hasn't changed in that.
Well, after a few months, we managed to, like, nail it down a little bit to where there was, like, some kind of format to what was going on. Or we'd sit down. Usually there was, I guess in the Hatch meetings, you know, there used to be, you know, everybody would kind of meet up for a little while, and then they would break off into smaller groups, and there was like a little sort of subcommittee for the radio show, and we would all sort of go off into our own little group and decide, okay, what do we want to talk about this week? You know, we've got a show coming up next month. What are we going to talk about?
Right.
And after a while, Jimmy got really, really brave and gave us an hour and a half segment.
Wow.
And we kept the half-hour segment going, which really kind of turned into sort of a music and gossip show. So we got to blow off steam on that one. And then, I don't know, we talked about all kinds of different stuff on the longer segment. Used to have people talk about various experiences, you know, coming out in high school and college.
Well, now you have the Gay Straight Alliances, one of the most recent topics that they've bantered around with. Mm-hmm. Several of the Hatch youth have actually started Gay Straight Alliances in high schools.
Wow. I tried to do that when I was at Texas Lutheran College for a couple of years. And I think the most populous meeting we ever attended had 3 or 4 students. And that was including myself and my friend Shauna, who helped me start it up. And then we ended up adopting the campus pastor as our faculty sponsor. And we had an offer from the head of the theology department. We also had a member of the administrative staff who did a lot of the PR, who kind of came and helped out for a little bit, and really would take us. I think he took Sean and I to, it was kind of like a speaking engagement / book signing that Mel White did in Austin.
Oh, wow.
Right after he released his book about his, you know, experiences in the Virginia Beach prison.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, he had taken a Valentine's box of candy and a bunch of flowers along with a bunch of people from the queer community over to Pat Robertson's home in Virginia Beach and sort of protested for him to make an announcement that it was wrong to, you know, physically harm queer people, you know, simply on that basis.
Well, that's revolutionary.
And he got jailed for trespassing. And so, since they weren't quite sure what to do with him in general population, they, if I remember the story right, they put him in maximum security so they could kind of, like, keep him sectioned off. And, I mean, he was there for, weeks before Pat Robertson actually agreed to sit down and meet with him. And that was the one condition. You know, they're like, well, you're free to go. And he says, well, I'm not leaving until Pat Robertson comes to talk to me.
Wow.
And Pat took, like, a few weeks to actually go talk to him. And so, and I can't remember if the book was about that or if it was just something he was putting out, but that was his big old story that he was telling.
Oh, wow. That's
at that time. It was pretty interesting. So, we couldn't get enough student interest in the gay lesbian, or it was a gay straight student alliance kind of thing. And it was kind of scary because we couldn't get really anybody who was interested enough in being out to other queer students.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that's an issue with some of the high school organizations, that becomes an issue. In fact, one of the things that they've been reporting is that there's more straight students that go or identify, or those that identify as being straight will go to the Gay Straight Alliances. So it just kind of depends on the school and what the environment is.
Sounds like a creaking closet door.
Well, yeah, that's, in some cases that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the format's still pretty much the same, although over the years, the personalities of the youth kind of dictate how the show goes.
Mm-hmm.
So in some years it's been like hijinks, and you don't know what's going to be said, and they talk a whole hour about nothing, basically.
Yeah.
And then other times, they get into really in-depth, thought-provoking discussions, well thought out, well debated, and we're really proud of them. So you kind of get that whole spectrum of the really polished, intellectual type of discussions to the hijinks and banter.
Mm. Ooh, girl, whose box is bigger?
Right.
Yeah. So kind of like with every other show on the station.
Yeah, you kind of get that. So
sometimes it's just for, you know, giggles and grins, and other times it's really, they're trying to say something.
Yeah. So it kind of goes back and forth. So, and I think we have a good group of youth now.
Mm-hmm.
Last month's show I thought was really good.
Cool. Well, what did we talk about last month?
We talked about coming out stories, and I believe that was last month. So it was good. Each person went around and talked about their various different experiences.
Cool. So how did you get involved with Hatch?
Oh, gosh, how did I get involved? Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things we need right now is more people, more adults, who are willing to step up and be a role model and to help out with the day-to-day functioning of the organization and to be role models for the youth. But going back to your question, I had a friend that I kind of had a crush on, and he was a volunteer for Hatch. And he said, you know, I've got something that I really think you'd be really good at. I think you should come to a meeting and let me introduce you to the organization, and I think you'd really enjoy it. So I went to a few of their meetings, and I was like, yeah, this is kind of a nice thing. Basically, you know, as some of our listeners know, Hatch meets weekly on Friday nights and Sunday nights. So as an adult facilitator, you're really responsible for either Friday night or a Sunday night every other week. So you're talking maybe two nights a month,
mm-hmm.
which is not a whole lot of time. 3 hours, 6 hours for the whole month. And you get the opportunity to talk with the youth, find out what's going on. Whenever the PFLAG Hatch scholarship's coming up, you encourage those youth to fill out those applications. We talk about what's going on. We facilitate small groups where the youth get together and talk about how their week's been going. And as an adult, you know, you offer some advice if that's appropriate, but really they kind of manage that on their own.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how it started off. And from there, I kind of got involved in the programming and fundraising for Hatch, and then eventually I was promoted to the MCC board, was at Montrose Counseling Center, which a few years ago, gosh, maybe 3 years ago now, Hatch and Montrose Counseling Center merged.
Hmm.
So it's been a great experience for me, but I know one of the things that some people go through is there's a reluctancy to be involved with a gay youth organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of sad, because one of the things we talk about is the internalized homophobia thing that so many people go through and still deal with. And because of that, people shy away from a youth organization. And really, the organization needs people who can be role models and can tell their story and can be positive influence. So if anyone's out there listening and would be interested, you know, please contact us. And of course, you know, we do background checks on all of our volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a training program that they go through. So you know, we look out to make sure that, you know, the right people get in that position, but it is something we need.
Yeah.
I do need to step in and let everyone know that you're listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude here on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
Oh, well, thank you, Chris. That was so nice.
Damn, it's asthma. I usually can say it faster in one breath. It's just...
You think about doing a fine print on car commercials?
No, it's just one of those things I've gone through so many times, and, you know, usually we're running so late that you have a certain amount of time you have to say it in, and the station at one point said, you know, you can say this, you can say this, we'd like you to say this, we'd like you to say that, so I was like, you know, I spent like a month there practicing there to how to go through all that, just so the FCC can stay off our ass for one reason.
Because after all, the only thing... Of all the things we want on our ass, the FCC is not one of them.
That's true.
That would be true.
And since we don't have to worry about the Peter and Connie Linga show anymore, the threat has been greatly lessened.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So, anyway, yeah, I was curious because the first times I started hearing about hats, actually, I was in high school. And I went to high school at HSPVA, or as we like to call it, the HS Weeby Gay. It's the Young Queer Factory situated in the middle of Montrose. And I had a lot of friends who were at least went to meetings here and there. But I never really got involved with it, you know, because I was... I had greatly sheltering parents growing up. You know, I didn't have a car in high school. I wouldn't, you know... They're like, well, we don't really want you to have a job. It's one of the reasons why we're not giving you a car. Once I went away to school for a couple years before I quit and moved in a completely wrong direction. And I went to a couple meetings with a friend of mine that I'd met at school who, you know, was kind of like, oh, well, let's go back. And, you know, I went to go meet a few people there, and then I really started getting involved again once I got back in town. You think the age range was from, like, 15 to 22.
Yeah, yeah. It's 13 to 21 now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, then they changed that. Like,
yeah.
It's been the same since they initially changed it. So, and I was already 21 by the time they turned it to 13 to 21. It really kind of helped save my ass a couple times.
Did it? Good.
Yeah.
We hear that story often from youth.
Yeah, there was... I really didn't have a whole lot of contact with other gay youth. You know, and I can remember when I would be at home visiting from school, and I guess it was one of my first trips home... I was watching PBS really late at night, and they were doing a run of Tales of the City, which I just latched onto. And that was also the same summer that I saw Reality Bites for the first time. And I remember I would just, like, watch the coming out segment from Reality Bites over and over and over and over again. Partially because, you know, I thought the blonde guy was really cute. But also because, you know, I was just like, God, you know, I guess I was 19 when I came out. It was over Thanksgiving, which I found out from our family counselor was one of the most popular times of the year to come out because you got all the family together. You can do it all at once.
Could you please pass the yams to a homosexual?
Yeah.
Hey.
Mom, quickly,
I've got that queued up here.
Leave Bob out of this. So, you know, and Hatch really was a good... place of support for me when I was having to deal with issues with coming out.
Oh, sure.
And, I don't know, it was a place where I could meet other young queer people, which was really just a big relief. And, I mean, even 10 years ago, we had a really, really diverse group of people.
Yeah.
We had a couple transgendered members back then.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's really, I don't... even the people I talked to who were at Hench, you know, long before that, you know, said that it's always been an amazingly diverse group.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you get your avant-garde Montrose kid, and you know, you
nobody else quite knows what to do with him.
Right, and you've got the that segment, and then you've got the yuppie type, upward mobility, young gay type of entrepreneurial sort. So it's a big mixture.
And then you occasionally get the Billy Joe redneck, you know, gay.
That's true.
Children.
Usually lesbians.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, the function of Hatch is still the same, and the heart of the organization is to provide a safe organization for gay youth to meet other people like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't changed, and that will never change. But one of the things that's happened over the last several years is it's kind of grown to become more than that. Hatch is currently, they have programs in place and partnerships with other organizations that really allow you to have the type of experience you would have in high school through your student council, through debate clubs, through student leadership opportunities, different field trips. So we're really building those type of skill sets with the youth. And the other thing is we try to make Hatch as fun as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of grown and adapted over the years. It's never going to change that providing a safe environment for other gay youth to mingle and meet and know each other. That's always going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
For example, some of the things, did they have the Hatch prom when you were?
Oh, yeah. The Hatch prom has been, I think, going on as far back as anybody can remember.
Yeah. Well, that's still one of the main events. Recently, in fact, it was my program. We started the Youth Leadership Outreach Program, where we take a youth and we pair them with a gay organization in the community, and they serve as student interns to some ways. They operate the same way their board member would operate. They enter into debate, they serve on committees, they may chair projects. The only difference is they don't vote. They don't have a vote on the governing board. And currently we have the Human Rights Campaign, who is participating with that, the Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, which has been very successful. That's actually the first organization we approached, and that's worked out very well. And they actually have allowed 3 to 4 Hatch youth to go to their general meetings each month, where their members underwrite the costs for the meal. So it gives them an opportunity to get the exposure to what's going on in the gay community. Let me see who else. The Gay and Lesbian Community Center Board. Mm-hmm. We had students Hatch youth who are on that board, and the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. So it's been a very effective program, and one that I'm very proud of. And hopefully what that allows is you introduce a youth to an organization, which once they age out of Hatch, then they can begin to put some of their energy into that and kind of develop a relationship with that other organization. And it gives them an opportunity to see something other than the bars and the clubs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it also gives you some kind of sense as to, you know, how to really get something out of the community by really participating in it.
Oh, sure, sure. You know, they've done research over and over. The sooner and younger that you introduce youth to community service, the more likely they are to carry that through for the rest of their lives.
You know, one of the things that I'm always griping about is that there's a lot of people in their 30s and 40s and up who, in the late 20s and up through the 30s and 40s, who, for all intents and purposes, all they want to do is have a good time in our community and stuff. And one of the great things I have seen out of Hatch Kids is kids who really want to do something, who really give a crap about, you know, getting political, getting activist, which has been absent from our community for a while now. The last time I saw that was, you know, in the early days of the AIDS
right
thing, and then people got all too comfortable, and now it's nice to see a group of kids, and several of them have been, you know, most of the ones I've seen have been former Hatch kids or current Hatch kids who are willing to get out there and actually say something.
Oh yeah.
And mm-hmm. you know, and get in the face of the you know, the people who just want to sit and
oh, right.
let it happen to them, you know, kind
well,
of.
Well, and all you really have to do to you know, usually to get young people interested in stuff like that is just to provide them with a direction and a structure.
Yeah. Just introduce them. And you know, one of the great selling points of the program is that it works well for the organization who's participating, because it gives them a lifeline into the youth population, which they mm-hmm. might not have already had, and also gives them a unique opportunity to train someone, a youth, a kid or a young adult, about their program, about the organization, so that they may have some longevity and history with that organization, and they could be the future leaders mm-hmm. for that group, and it gives you an opportunity to kind of bring somebody up in that,
right?
And
right.
give your organization some history after you'll be gone.
I mean, because mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots of former activists out of there who are, you know, for lack of a nicer way of putting this, dying off.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they are dying off, and some of them have died.
Well, a lot of them just getting old and tired.
And some of them are getting old and, you know, ready to retire from all this. They've done all this screaming that they feel like they can do.
There you go, using that R word.
Huh?
Retire.
Yeah. But it's like, and it's like, get out, and so it's nice to at least see a handful of people who are ready to, you know, sort of take that up again, especially in light of the fact that since we started this with the whole World AIDS Day conversation, you know, it's still out there, you know?
Well, not only that,
and we still need somebody who's still got the energy to, you know.
Well, as far as our activists go who are dying, you know, it's what's killing a lot of them off.
Right.
You know?
So, and there needs to be a new generation to pick up the torch.
Sure.
And so,
you know, speaking on that, during the Gay and Lesbian Pride Parade, Hatch won the Stonewall Award.
Yay!
Isn't that great? And one of the reasons why we won that award is partly because of Jeffrey's input, which is the one who's participating in the World AIDS mm-hmm. Day, Channel 17 of it, is we had a lot of flyers and a lot of posters and taking the message that, you know, AIDS is still out there, you know, avoid the second wave, you know, a lot of education around that, you know, mm-hmm. AIDS, HIV, this is still a threat, and it's not something you should forget about. It's something you should always be aware of. And he was the large voice to make that happen and to incorporate that message in our float. And I think that's the reason why right. we won that award.
So, you know, as somebody who's been positive for 10 years, it's a horror to me that I have so many friends who are in their age group, in, you know, in the Hatch age group, that are coming to me telling me that they've tested positive.
Right.
And I just want to scream. It's like, and you know, to see that there are some people who are willing to, you know, say, no, you know, I'm not going to let this happen.
Right.
I'm not going to get in, you know. And you know, congratulations to the group for that
sure.
award.
I'm going to step up on my soapbox for just a little bit.
Yay.
On a topic that just drives me absolutely insane. And that's the state school board, when they adopted school books that purposefully left out contraceptives as a way to prevent pregnancy and to prevent sexually transmitted diseases, HIV, syphilis, gonorrhea, whatever.
Haven't you heard abstinence is the answer?
That's right. One of the things we do at Hatch is we monthly we talk about ways to prevent sexually transmitted disease, primarily HIV, but all the other things that go along with that. And that's a regular part of our program, because kids aren't getting that message in schools, and they may not be getting that messages at home. And one of the things that I'm really worried about is all of these kids that these parents are so worried about, and they don't want their little darlings to know about sex, when they go off to college, their first year in college, where they have all this freedom in the world, they're going to be so vulnerable to those things that they've been sheltered from, mm-hmm. which if you just had information and you knew how, if you know how to properly put on a condom, and you know how, and what to do and what not to do, and how you can increase your risk or how you can decrease your risk. I mean, just simple little things like that, that people don't know. The other thing that is just amazing to me is a lot of church groups have been having people come and talk about the abstinence-only policy, where they will actually pair their youth, their child, with a parent, and they'll hold hands, and they will have the child commit that they will not have sex out of marriage. Mm-hmm. With their parents standing right there. And they've done some follow-up studies, and those youth that are making those commitments are more likely to participate in oral sex and anal sex. And these are the same youth who aren't getting the message of how to protect themselves from all mm-hmm. these sexually transmitted diseases. I mean, it's just a horrible mess.
And they're not and although these kids are old enough to have grown up in the age of AIDS, they have not grown up in the... They are not fully aware. They hear about it as a background thing,
right?
You know, as this threat out there, but they don't understand the face of it. They don't understand the true...
Well, either that
pain
or they
and
see
suffering that it causes.
Well, but they see all these glossy ads,
yeah,
with these,
the
ripped, fit, you know,
all these
hot, young-looking guys in these ads
in these
for HIV mm-hmm. medications, and it's just like, you know,
the message.
They ought to do a couple rounds on like an AIDS floor in a hospital and really take a look at what, you know, the tail end of that looks like, because it's unbelievable. But I mean, the farther we get away from the inception of the AIDS epidemic, the more washed out the images of the disease become.
That's true.
And the more whitewashed the side effects of the drugs get. And
well,
I realize
some of the drugs can kill you.
Well, basically what a lot of people don't realize is that when you're on an HIV cocktail, you are on chemotherapy. May not be radioactive, but it is chemotherapy. And it has got some mm-hmm. severely harsh side effects.
Yes.
Some of which, you know, you live with every day.
To.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
Well, and Merlin's one of the lucky ones.
Jimmy,
who only takes what, like 4 pills
a
day?
I take 5 pills a day, 3 in the morning, 2 at night.
And that's the lowest number I've ever heard of.
And I consider myself a lucky son of a... because of it, because I have friends. I used to have a friend who, just to get through a day, was taking 29 different kinds of medications.
That's amazing.
And, you know, there ain't a medical program out there that covers 29 medications.
Yeah.
No. And you know, that's just not sexy.
And for a kid, yeah, hello. This is not that bright, shiny, pretty boy who, you know, on the cover of a medical thingy, you know, some ad in a newspaper saying some drop dead gorgeous queen who, you know, I can live with it, and I'm
I
like
live here.
Right, tell that, and when that same guy's liver or kidneys are shutting down,
that's
because
right.
the meds,
because
have
the meds are doing it, not the,
that's
I
right.
mean, especially when you're taking, you know, 15, 20 plus pills a day. Sorry, folks, it's the meds that are going to kill you quicker than the disease.
Yeah. And the horror to me, and since we have been talking about Hatch.
Oh, and this is such a big topic with Hatch. I mean, it's appropriate we're talking
about. It's a huge topic, because I've met kids that age And that's and they're looking at this and all of
and
a sudden
and they say it's manageable
and they and
I might
and,
as well get it to take the mystery out of
right.
it.
Yeah, yeah. And they start with the idea that they'll be okay if they get it. Then and then it's like they
well,
get
some
it.
Some of them are even bug chasers.
Boom.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all.
That's a whole nother monster out there that I don't even begin to understand.
Yeah, and you know that's why we spend one night a month talking about the risks and the preventions and.
Usually about once a month when I was involved, usually AFH would send somebody in and, you know, they would do maybe like about 30, 45 minutes just presentation on, you know, how the virus works, how it's transmitted, you know, various percentage risks, you know, and we would talk, we, you know, really kind of took it a step further and would talk about things like, okay, well, if you're going to be paranoid about risk, well, then, you know, you need to cut this, this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this out, you know,
right.
But we really went a step further and talked about, like, acceptable risk, you know, what it is, you know, that, you know, you're willing to accept for, you know, you'd sort of following it up with a, you know, with the thought that there are consequences to the choices you make
sure.
sexually, and you know you are free to choose whichever you know road you want to take, but you need to understand. And it was really kind of put out there like that. You need to understand that if you choose to go out and you know bareback your way across the country, that you know there are some really heavy consequences
right.
to that.
You know, I mean. It's a fairly natural state for a teenager to think of themselves in terms of 10 foot tall and bulletproof.
Oh,
and I
sure.
use that phrase a lot when discussing this.
Well, and
but at least what I have seen amongst the Hatch kids as a whole, when I've talked to them, is that they are aware
that they
at least are aware, are made aware through the program from what I've seen,
right,
that they are not 10 foot tall and bulletproof.
Oh yeah,
you know they can die just as easily as somebody in their 90s.
Well, and it's important that they get that type of exposure to the information too, because especially I mean the Hatch age group really is a generation that was born in the AIDS epidemic.
Yeah, that's true.
After the dawn of the AIDS epidemic, they have grown up their entire lives hearing about it. So, you know, it seems to me that they have really grown up with that as part of the 10-foot tall and bulletproof vocabulary. I mean, that they've assimilated HIV into, oh, that's never going to happen to me, or, mm-hmm. oh, you know, I'm too cool for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of become like drunk driving, you know. Oh, well, you know, once or twice won't kill you.
Yeah.
Bad news.
Well, you know, it may or may not.
Mm-hmm.
I am the youngest of 7 children. My parents one of my parents outlived 3 of their children. The idea to me of any parent having to watch their child waste away
mm-hmm.
like that, And it's a horror to me. I mean, I know how I feel being friends with some of these people, some of these young people, and the idea that I might outlive them terrifies me.
What I find it disturbs me when we as a society don't feel it's important to educate and let youth, young adults, know what the dangers are and what they can do to protect them if they make certain decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thankful for Hatch and organizations like the Hatch that at least that's one way we can get that information out.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel very strongly about sharing that information. And,
right.
and we model how to talk about that to other people and what to say in certain situations to make sure that, you know, if you are getting pressure to have unsafe sex, what are some of the ways that you
mm-hmm.
you deflect that and what can you say? And so all that's really important. And
I had we had an interesting experience during the last World AIDS Day. We had just, he and I had gone to the exhibit of the quilt that they did
at
Rice.
Robert Rice.
And we were sitting over, and then we were sitting over at the cafe. And this young man came up to us, and he had heard us talking about the exhibit and stuff like that, and he came up to us, and he said to he said, I overheard your conversation, and I need to ask you something. And he says, I'm 19 years old, and I've just found out that 7 of my friends, all in my age group, have tested positive. How do I deal with that? You know, and we went, and we all sat there, and I don't know how much of this Scott remembers, but we all sat there for a little while and talked about just loving, just treating them like people, which is in the past more than they got when this epidemic started.
Oh, sure.
You know, treating them like human beings, treating them as if they are no different. They just have something they have to deal with, and something that is, it's a monster, but it's something that they have to live with, not die. You know, not, I make a big deal out of the idea of living with AIDS, not dying with it. Yes, sure. You can die, but living with it, living every day as if it's, you know, the best day you're going to have, just going for it. And we tried to explain that to this, that it's like, and to those friends who are not positive yet, getting the message out to his friends that, you know, this, you know, you can make this not happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's what I love about the fact that there is a hatch, because when I was a kid that age, we didn't have a hatch, you know.
Sure.
We didn't. Long Island may have had a gay organization, but I wasn't part of it when I was, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just, well, I mean, it's just, and it's just, that suddenly came to mind as we were sitting here talking about that. I mean, that conversation. 19-year-old sitting there crying because friends around him may die, and they're all in his age group.
You know? Well, and it was, it really got hit home to me. There's a friend of mine who, I guess it was, I don't know, I want to say like August or September of last year, who I was really close to and has spent a lot of time with, who came to me and had told me that he had just tested positive, and I mean, he couldn't have been much more than 22, 23.
Yeah.
And really didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
And within 3 months was actually dead from an overdose. Because, I mean, he wasn't plugged into the right places or with the right support. But, I mean, it was just too overwhelming for
him.
You
know, that's one of the most positive things that have come out of the merger with the Montrose Counseling Center and Hatch coming together, is that Hatch now has the resources of the Montrose Counseling Center. Whenever there's a youth that has an issue that we, as adult facilitators, can't or are not capable of helping with, then we can refer those people over, and those youth go to the top of the list for getting services and counseling, getting information. So that has been a wonderful byproduct of Hatch coming under the MCC umbrella. And I'm really thankful for that, because I think Hatch has, and the services we've been able to provide to the youth have improved a great deal. And one of those is providing life skills, providing counseling for traumatic issues or events that might happen.
Well, I think that my friend's story is also one of the things that is a byproduct of this, you know, don't educate the kids, just sweep it under the carpet. I mean, instead of teaching them how to make, you know, good choices or informed decisions, we're so afraid of them making bad decisions that we just don't provide them with any of the information, life skills, or tools necessary for making those decisions.
We don't want to see the old stuff.
Well, but it's like, you know, I see this in, you know, in a lot of parents, in that they're so blinded by their fear about their kids, you know, just falling into this really horrific downward spiral that they just shelter them from everything. And the kids' abilities to discern between, you know, what is good for them and what is bad for them is just completely lost because all those decisions get made for them. They get, you know, cornered off. You know, it's part of the whole problem with why we don't have, you know, contraceptives as a prevention for, you know, pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases. I mean, it's all part of the same thing. You know, just don't teach it to them and you won't have a problem.
I'm sorry, you get 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old kids together. They're going to be horny and they're going to want to have sex. I'm sorry. That's just the fact of life.
There's these people who put their kids in this white, who want to protect their kids in this great white tower. And guess what? Those kids still have to go out the door and deal with the rest of the universe, and that universe is not the bright, shiny white tower they're living in. They have to deal with the realities of
things. And many of those sheltered kids are the first ones to learn a very hard lesson.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just amazing.
It's the white the tower crumbles, and all of a sudden they come face to face with death. With the idea of dying. And how does somebody who has not had to deal with reality, who has not, you know, had mommy and daddy act like, oh, their life will always be perfect and I'll always be able to protect them and all this BS. How do they deal with that? How do they, you know, they have, if they're lucky, they have a place like Hatch, then they find Hatch.
Right.
And one of the other great things is that, you know, we have things, as much as I am a computer phobe, that we have the internet and places they can get to, you know, phone numbers and
oh, right.
websites and
That's
things
right.
that they can get to these services.
That's right.
You know? Which is not something that was happening when, you know.
That's yeah, that's right.
So
I mean, and a couple of new things. Hatch actually had was part of a public access. They had a public access TV for a period of time, just this last year. So that's kind of that was new, and of course we also do video. It's called. Turned up volume. Did they have turned up volume when you were
mm-hmm.
around? It's basically a multimedia training where they learn how to script out. They do the shooting, the production, the videotaping, the editing, the directing, the acting, and they put together a film. And they incorporate live performance as part of that multimedia presentation. So it's very neat. When that does come up again, I'll make sure that you guys know about it. And we've actually had youth that have participated in that program that have decided to go and make film their career. And to kind of go to school and learn more about that. So that's another interesting one of the neat things that Hatch is able to provide.
Yeah, it's possible direction for your life.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And there's a lot of other really neat projects we have. I don't know if I can say this or not, but what the heck. We're planning a virtual Hatch House where you can get on the website, get on the Hatch site, and we'll have all this interactive information, programs that Hatch is involved with, specific chat rooms based upon what your interests are with other youth, resources for them to connect with and get information regarding. So that's still in the development process.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anyone out there listening who can help or if they have any expertise in the IT arena, then that's definitely an area where we could use some people helping us develop that program.
Now where could they plug into to get information on that?
Well, darn it, usually the youth have the number that they call for Hatch.
Well, are you guys still maintaining a website as well?
Yeah. Hatchyouth.org, I believe. Cool. www.hatchyouth.org.
I'll get the number as soon as I
Thank
click
you.
Off of the
the naughty stuff.
Yeah. The naughty stuff or the Daily Rotten?
Or are you checking out the Daily Rotten?
I don't know. He says his name is Tempted 20. Oh, oh.
Well.
Good old Chris. Always good for something inappropriate.
Hey, the kiddies aren't here, so I don't have to block the screen.
We're all old enough to defend ourselves in a court of law.
And he can, too.
Just, yeah, usually they have the number, but I do have a number that I would like everyone to write down, and that's the gay and lesbian hotline switchboard. And the reason this is an important number to have programmed in your cell phone is you never know when you're going to be in a crisis or when a friend of yours is going to be in crisis. You don't know if you're going to be sexually assaulted or when, or one of your friends is going to be sexually assaulted. And this is a number that if you have, they can make sure that they assign an advocate for you that can walk through you and be with you in any of those given situations. And that number is 713-529-3211.
One more time?
713-529-3211.
Cool. And that's the gay lesbian switchboard.
That's right.
And believe me, if you don't think that same-sex sexual assault happens,
it does. We have living proof in the room.
Well, you know, Montrose Counseling Center has safe houses for gay men and lesbian couples that they can put you up in. Have housing for you so you can get away from a partner that might be abusing you.
They helped me get away from my ex.
Oh, that's great.
When my ex decided that that slamming my head into pavement was a good idea.
Oh, wow.
I just thought you'd be a Picasso painting.
Yeah. Okay, my body's enough of a Picasso painting before getting the crap beat out of me.
If you are a youth and we're interested in Hatch, once again, the website is hatchyouth.org. You can call them at 713-529-3590. And if I remember correctly, leave a message, and a youth will call you back. And hey, I'm in such and such class in... I need to ask them a math question or something. You know, so it's not like, yeah, we're the queer youth group. We want to talk to your son. You don't get that.
No,
they make it so it's, even if mommy and daddy answer the phone, they are not going to know anything unless they snoop in on the other line.
That's right.
Yeah, on the subject of sexual assault, I with the statistics of straight, you know, of women being assaulted and not reporting it being incredibly low. Yeah. I mean, just, it's a very high number of people who don't report it. The idea of a gay or lesbian or, you know, assault not being reported is easily...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I know people. I know somebody whose entire life has been turned upside down and because he was assaulted by a boyfriend.
Right.
And I mean, he spiraled into a, you know, just this horrible spiral of drugs and you know, let that destroy him.
Sure.
You know, let it destroy him. And no, and I don't care what the situation is for you. You should know that you don't have to go through this stuff alone.
Sure.
Be it, you know, wanting to commit suicide, sexual assault, whatever. And that's what I love about that organization letting people know you don't have to be alone.
That's right. And you know, if you had a situation or if there's something you want to get involved with or there's something that you needed more information about, one of the best resources you can go to is one of the Hatch Youth because of the information that we provide them, the training we give them, the resources. They really, as a segment, I think that they are some of the most knowledgeable and most savvy about how to get information, how to get services, where to go to get this type of help than any other group in our community. And I'm really proud about that.
They've blown me away by knowing stuff that, you know, about how to do things. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah, I'm really proud of
these
that.
Kids know what they're talking about.
I'm really proud.
Yeah, I mean, there for a while I was looking at, you know, I was considering, because I've spoken at a couple of the Hatchy meetings, and I was thinking, you know, about looking to be a facilitator, and then when I go and meet the kids, and especially here at the show, it's like, you know, they should be facilitating for me. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, what more can I teach these kids?
But having those positive role models there, where they can see you, they can come to you, they can bond with you. There may be one youth that won't bond with anybody else, but for whatever reason, there'll be something about you that will allow them to say, "Hey, this is how my day went," or "This is what I'm going through," or
no.
You know,
because you know we're.
And not to put pressure on you, pressure on you to do that, but
no, we're not cookie cutter people,
right?
You know, yeah. there's certain aspects that someone can draw out that can be helpful to someone, you know, someone like Bobby who you know with the HIV positive, with you know the disability, you know domestic abuse, so many different aspects, you know, he could. He's our fill-in segment.
Well, you're still walking.
you know, Chris once called me a one-trick pony one night.
No, you weren't a one-trick pony.
And then he realized that, no, it's three or four different ones that are...
Actually,
no. No, the one-trick pony's out
the
there.
One,
no, with Bobby, it's like, you know, we can throw a couple things into a hat and go, okay, let's see. But today's topic is disabled persons with HIV or disabled persons with domestic abuse that... has so much you can contribute to that sort of thing. Yeah. My reach with Hatch besides the fair was through Q Patrol of going and giving safety lectures.
Oh, sure.
And that sort of thing. And I mean, everyone can contribute a little something. There's
That's
some
right.
part of their aspect that they can be of kind of a light there because it's something you may not think of.
I was just thinking that, you know, there's a saying that I love that goes that the wisest among us know that we do not know everything.
Oh, sure.
And age is not always a measure of wisdom. I have learned, you know, talking to some of those kids here or over at the cafe or, you know, in different situations, I have learned just how strong kids can be and how much they have to, you know, when you know, grown-ups are always, you know, oh, they're just kids and all this. And I'm like, no, I've learned stuff from them. And part of that is because they've gotten involved in a thing like Hatch, you know, where they get to show people that, you know, they're not just the throwaway kid.
Right.
Because, oh, they're queer. You know?
And you know, it's an interesting mix. We have youth that their parents will pick them up, drop them off, and participate very hands-on. Mm-hmm. Then we have others that have been thrown out by their parents, excommunicated by their churches, mm-hmm. told not to come back. We still get that today. I mean,
it's nice to know that nothing changes.
Well. Yeah, it's sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I know that my parents were never really very involved. I mean, they would loan me the car so that I could go drive up there, or every so often they would, like, drop me off, you know. And what was it? There was one night they were doing some sort of... we were doing a Hatch Awards banquet, and one of my mom's best friends was the... music director at the church where we were meeting.
Oh.
And, you know, so this little sort of ensemble, and I think it was like right before I had come out to my parents, and there was this sort of chamber music ensemble, and the music director, my mom's friend, had come up to me, and she's like, okay, you really need to kind of like be back here because your mom's going to be playing for this thing, you know, because I talked her into it. And so we had to kind of do a little shuffling around until I had come out to my parents.
Of course, I've known Scott for 7 years, and anybody mistaking Scott for a straight person
has some issues.
Yeah, Scott's responsible for me being here.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, he brought me to this station. Yeah.
Wow.
He brought me to the station and introduced me to everybody. And
it's like J.L. Bates says, there's somebody. Gotta have somebody to blame.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in this world that's my fault.
There's probably several things that they haven't found out about you that are probably his fault.
But Scott has led many a young man down the path of something or other.
Yes.
Maybe it's righteousness, maybe it's wrongness, but...
You know,
there
yellow
was something
brick
right about
the
it at the time.
The yellow brick road to the gingerbread house?
I have that movie at home.
May have been left. We don't know.
All right. Well, we're going to start wrapping up here. Give us more information. Give final information on some with Hatch there. And we're going to play some music that I never thought I'd be able to play on this show. But we've turned Jimmy over.
Oh, that's not difficult.
You know, he weighs about this much.
Wait a minute. You mean his opinion.
Yeah.
But before you go, if there is somebody out there listening, and for whatever reason, if you're uncomfortable about being a day-to-day or a facilitator, there's other ways you can be involved. There's a Hatch program committee that's responsible for providing the funding, the fundraising, and some of the programming that we do for Hatch. And that's less hands-on, that's more committee work that's done away from the actual organization. So if there's someone out there who's interested in that, then please contact us, because there's something for you to do. There's some way for you to fit in and help the great program.
Okay, so once again, you can check it out, hatchyouth.org, for more information. I guess one more continuation in the World AIDS Day theme is a movie that started out on Wednesday called Rent, based off of the Broadway musical / opera.
Mm-hmm.
Rock opera.
And, rock opera. And it's... I've seen the play. I'm going out with... my organization, the Houston Big Men's Club, tomorrow, we're going out to see the movie version.
We're finally going out to see Rent instead of Rent Boys.
Click. I don't have to.
That was a secret?
I don't have to do that anymore. I found out where I can find it for free.
Ooh. Sorry, it was a cheap shot. I had to take it.
Yeah. Well, those in crystal palaces shouldn't throw stones.
I moved.
Well, so did I. You didn't get my change of address form.
He moved out of that palace.
But the movie ran, like I said, Jimmy had heard the musical part of it. Basically, he started to hear the first song and didn't like it.
How is that possible?
Well, he never saw the play. He just heard the music, and it's like, you know, the song Rent, he just didn't speak to him. Well, he went and saw the movie with ICOH, and he's a changed person.
Ooh.
So, normally I play Seasons of Love. But since that's considered my funeral dirge music, I play on here. Went for something a little peppier. And this is a song that got me to go see the play, because it was what was performed on the Tony Awards for them. And after I left that, it was like Seasons of Love just hit me so much. But we're going to go with a little La Vie Boheme. And once we are back, we are going to have Mistress Max here and take your phone calls and all that other good stuff. So from the movie, this is actually the Broadway soundtrack, but most of the people are the same, just 10 years older. La Vie Boheme.
No, please, no, not tonight. Please, no, Mr. Can't you go? Not tonight, can't have a scene.
What?
Oh, please, will you have...
No, sir,
I said no important customer.
What am I, just a flirt?
You said all night, you never buy.
That's a lie, that's a lie. I had a tea the other day.
Couldn't pay.
Oh, yeah.
Benjamin Coffin III, here.
Oh, no.
Wine and beer.
The enemy of Avenue A.
Brings a mogul in his own mind to the Life Cafe.
I would like to propose a toast to Maureen's noble try. It went well.
Go to hell.
Was the yuppie scum stomped? Not counting the homeless, how many tickets weren't comped?
Why did Muffy
Allison
miss the show?
There was a death in the family, if you must know.
Who died?
Our Akita.
Evita.
Mimi, I'm surprised. A bright and charming girl like you hangs out with these slackers who don't adhere to deals. They make fun, yet I am the one attempting to do some good. Or do you really want a neighborhood where people piss on your stoop every night? Bohemia, bohemia, the fallacy in your head. This is
station playing hooky, making something out of nothing. The need to express, to communicate, to going against the grain, going insane, going mad. Love of attention, no pension, to more than one dimension. People starving for attention, hating convention, hating potential. Not to mention, of course, hating dear old mom and dad. To no absolutes, the absolute, to choice, to the village voice, to any passing fad, to being an us for once, instead of a them.
La Vie Boheme.
La Vie Boheme.
If the equipment in a pyramid is Maureen, the mixer doesn't have a case, don't give me that face. Hey, mister. She's my sister.
So that's five miso soup, four seaweed salad, three soy burger dinner, two tofu dog platter, and one pasta with meatless balls.
Ew.
It tastes the same.
If you close your eyes.
And 13 orders of fries. Is that it here?
Wine and beer.
Two hand-crafted beers made in local breweries. To yoga, to yoga, to rice and beans and cheese. To leather, to dildos, to curry, vindaloo. And Maya Angelou. Emotion, devotion, to causing a commotion. Creation, vacation,
mutual masturbation.
From passion to fashion, to passion when it's new.
To Sondheim,
to Sondheim,
anything taboo.
Ginsburg, Dylan, Cunningham and Cage.
Lenny Bruce,
Langston Hughes.
To the stage, to Buddha.
To Buddha,
before you pack.
Yes, Maureen.
Well, hurry back.
Sisters?
We're close.
Brothers! Bisexuals, trisexuals, homo sapiens, carcinogens, hallucinogens, men, Pee-wee Herman, German, my serpent, I go to Zion, Antonio, Liberta, Lucci, Kurosawa, Carmina, Verona, who has the thing to enter me to end but the ecstasy.
Bohemia, an impromptu salon will commence immediately following dinner. Mimi Marquez, clad only in bubble wrap, will perform her famous lawn chair handcuff dance to the sounds of iced tea being stirred. And Mark Cohen will preview his new documentary about his inability to hold an erection on the high holy days. And Maureen Johnson, back from her spectacular one-night engagement in the 11th Street lot, will see Native American tribal chants backwards through her vocoder while accompanying herself on the electric cello, which she has never studied. And Roger will attempt to write a bittersweet, evocative song that doesn't remind us of Musetta's waltz. Will model the latest fall fashions from Paris while accompanying herself on the 10-gallon plastic pickle tub.
And Collins will recount his exploits as anarchist, including the television's successful reprogramming of the MIT virtual reality equipment to self-destruct as it broadcasts the word
actual reality.
And by next week, I want you to be
kooky.
And you should see, they padlocked your building and they're rioting on Avenue B. Benny called the cops. They don't know what they're doing.
the soundtrack of the Broadway, Tony Award-winning Broadway production of Rent, La Vie Boheme.
La Vie Boheme.
And yes, I did edit out.
Yes, you did.
For not just for content, but
for colorful those of you, words.
Yes.
Well, no, there was another kind of an aside, because this is a Broadway opera, so there's the action going on, and then there's this kind of a soliloquy portion on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to kind of pull that part out because it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
And so the greater part, I had to play more and more of the song, and then, you know, we'd end up just playing the whole darn CD.
No. I just like the La Vie Boheme song.
So, like I said, it was one of those things that, you know, when I saw, that's the song that got me to go
see
the play.
Have you seen the movie yet?
I'm going tomorrow.
I have seen it.
I and a half dozen large men are going to go crash at the Edwards Theater
yes.
at 6:30 to go watch this movie.
Uh-huh.
So if you're there, make room. And the candy bar is closed.
And the movie is very different, I hear, from the stage play because there is spoken word in it.
Yes. Basically, the play was a rock opera.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found out from Jimmy is there is, I was wondering this after seeing the play, going, there's got to be certain parts they cut out to make it PG-13.
Yes.
And one of them
would have to be that song.
No, this song.
This song is in it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
There is a very visual in the play of sex scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I play Jimmy the song that's played during that scene.
No, that song is not in the movie.
He doesn't remember that song.
I would remember that song, yes.
And it's a very, on the play version, what it is basically you've got three beds
mm-hmm.
up on stage. You have a gay male couple, you have a lesbian couple, and you have a straight couple. And you hear all these hot, sweat, sweet, I mean, all these, you just see us writhing around on the beds.
Mm-hmm.
And the song ends, and one of the characters has passed on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very moving thing on the play that the sheet that they were wrapped, that they were cavorting in, he's shrouded in it as he walks off stage.
Yeah.
And
too much cavorting?
Well, he passes of AIDS.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that's what the theme of Rent is.
Mm-hmm.
If you're familiar with the original Broadway play, which is La Boheme,
mm-hmm.
Jonathan, I don't have his name here, I forgot. What he wrote was basically a modern version of La Boheme, where all the characters die, or the characters are dealing with pneumonia.
Yeah, tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis, that's right, tuberculosis. And so it's the modern-day tuberculosis mm-hmm. of HIV/AIDS. And that's the common thread that's through these characters. But it's an interesting thing. You know, considering the fact that any film that has a gay theme to it generally gets an R rating. And this one got a PG-13.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a gay theme.
So you see part of that where it's pulled. Some of these parts may be sanitized for your protection.
Okay. You're listening You're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, right here on good old listener-sponsored Pacifica Station, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, and KPFT Galveston at 89.5 FM. I'm Jimmy Carper, Chris Harrison. We are co-executive producers of the show, and we have Mr. Snacks.
Good morning.
It's kind of a abbreviated version of the leather line.
Yes, it is.
Because you and I have been cavorting in the lobby.
Yes, outside, like it was all about us.
Well, yeah, it was all about us, actually, because you had an event and had sold some raffle tickets, and
yes.
I happened to win a fabulous basket.
A kinky basket, yes.
And
Imagine that.
And I was amazed at all of the items that I would actually use.
Yes. All of them, I do believe. Well, all except the needle.
The gift certificate.
Yeah, well, you can pass it on to somebody.
I have several people in mind, actually.
Regifter.
Well, it's okay.
Hey.
So anyway, it's just us.
It's just
this
us.
This morning.
So, you know, it's like, let's talk about you and...
And let's talk about you, too.
And how you came to KPFT. Because you're not a native Houstonian.
No. No, I'm actually a New Yorker.
Mm-hmm. And what brought you to Houston?
By way of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I came here. I had found a slave that I had been seeing for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had an awesome time, a wonderful time, traveling all over the place. And I was seldom home.
Mm-hmm.
So, I also thought it was a good idea at the time to come here to be with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the relationships in this are no different than any other relationships in any other thing. And sometimes it works out. And sometimes it sucks.
Yep.
And this sucked and not very well.
Yeah.
So...
We all know what that's like.
We use the phrase suck, but not in a good way.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Right. But I decided, I was so exhausted,
mm-hmm.
that I just decided to stay. And
well, you're very knowledgeable with S&M and the BDSM community.
I've been doing this as a pro dom,
mm-hmm.
for 15 years.
Wow.
And I've been in the lifestyle for 20.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of knowing what I was doing, in terms of going out and learning and finding out how to do this safely and properly and understand my feelings about mm-hmm. it. But I've been doing it actually all my life. I would dress my cousins up, you know, in women's clothes and make them clean my room. And
oh, really?
And if they didn't do a good job, I'd beat them up.
Oh.
You know, they'd have to be spanked.
Uh-huh.
And it was really funny because as we got older, like, you know, 9, 10, they would cry and beg their mothers not to bring them over.
Oh, you're kidding.
When we talked about it when we got older, you know, and it's like all of a sudden nobody would come anymore. Their parents would still come to see my mother. And I'd go, well, where's so-and-so? Where's so-and-so? Oh, he wasn't feeling good today. But I found out later that they didn't want to come over the house anymore.
They didn't want to play that game.
No, I don't understand that. I mean,
you thought they were having a good time.
Even like my godbrother. My mother and I raised him, so when my mother passed, he wanted a photo,
mm-hmm.
you know, album. And I had pictures. He was only like 2 years old. I was only, you know, like 10 mm-hmm. or something myself, where I dressed him up, makeup and everything, and took pictures of him holding a Kotex box.
You're kidding me.
And I put those in the photo album. You know, I said, here, you can show these to your daughter. So it's just, I mean, it was a game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that's the game that I wanted to play. When you played house, I wanted to be the dominant
yes.
figure, you know? There were a couple of friends in the neighborhood that I made friends with, and I protected them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would come and, of course, help me, you know, clean up my room or do little chores, come with me to the store. And if anybody bothered them, I would protect them.
Wow, you really...
Yeah.
It comes from within.
Yeah. But I come from a matriarchal...
I see.
Family.
Okay.
You know, my great-grandmother regulated, ran things.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother, my mother. My mother was a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
She had me because she wanted a child. So the only father I ever knew actually was a woman.
Gotcha.
So it's just all these
sure.
strong women who knew how they wanted to live. And in the 50s... You know, my mother openly lived this way.
Wow.
You know, she and my Aunt Dot would get dressed up, and Aunt Dot looked just like Nat King Cole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wore the processed hair.
Yeah, yeah.
And she didn't wear slacks, but she wore skirts, but all tailored
very
suits.
Very tailored, yeah.
And they would go out and walk down the street, and lots of times I would overhear them talking about hassles they got.
Sure.
You know, when they would go downtown or go shopping.
And where was this?
This was in New York.
New York.
Mm-hmm.
Not New York City?
In New York City. They were fine when they were in Harlem.
Gotcha.
But when they went outside,
mm-hmm.
you know, they caught hell. They
yeah.
didn't care.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
You know, so I just had a very, very interesting upbringing.
Because the 50s were so incredibly repressed.
Exactly.
People who were out are heroes.
Yeah, yeah. And they just lived their life totally
yeah.
open. You know, her family was supportive
mm.
of her, so it wasn't that problem, so she didn't care.
So it's good, good. And it wasn't until the late 60s that people started really coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
60s and then into
mm-hmm.
the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And still, in corporate life, it wasn't until
yeah.
the 80s and the 90s
exactly.
that people were able to come out.
Right.
Yeah.
And still, with that, it's predominantly in entertainment type.
You bet.
Industries.
You bet.
You know?
Yeah. Gosh. I'm amazed at that.
Me too, when I think back on it sometimes. But this is just a natural progression for me.
You've been here now for
2 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you have really opened my eyes to a lot of things, because I know prior to you and several other people, the leather line kind of started as... It actually was started by a woman, but then the guys got into it, and then it became who's Mr. Leather this and Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Leather that, and where contests are going on where, and there wasn't so much of the education and the demonstrations than when women became involved, and especially you.
Well, I think education is extremely, extremely important.
Right.
Because this can be a dangerous thing.
Oh, yes, if you don't know what you're doing.
In many areas,
mm-hmm.
and not even just the physical
mm-hmm.
play. I think there is much more of a stigma on... The stigma on BDSM today, I think, is what it was in homosexuality in the 50s.
Probably.
Even though it's becoming, I don't want to say mainstream, commercial, you know,
yeah,
you're seeing it on commercials
mm-hmm.
and they're throwing a bit in here and there and,
but it's
and
always,
shows
but,
and everything.
But yes, but when you see it like in cop shows or something, it's very negative.
Exactly, exactly. Because that pretty much is the view.
Yes.
Because for most people, the only thing they know about it is based on some porno tape that
mm-hmm.
they got hold of, which is produced by some het guy.
Exactly.
Who
who's
makes
not in
them
the
in their garage in mm-hmm. Pasadena, California.
Yeah.
So people have a tendency to think, oh, God, these people just snatch people up off the street and tie them up and beat them up. They don't know that probably the scene between these two people are two people that have been together forever.
Or they
people
have...
People who are into it.
Or they have negotiated.
They absolutely
yes.
have negotiated, you know, and that is not shown.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that people are wanting to find out more about. And therefore, I really am into the education
mm-hmm.
so that people can free their minds but keep their buttocks safe.
Because yeah. when we talk about play, we're not always talking about sex.
Ooh,
we're talking
true.
About emotional and
physical.
And physical desires.
Exactly.
And also, Izar, and what you want to do and where you want to be taken, mm-hmm. and all of that kind of stuff. That's part of the negotiation.
Exactly. But it forces one to grow, shall we say, before you even get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to sit down and have a conversation with yourself.
Yeah.
To think about what it is you want, how you want to go about doing it. Some fantasies need to remain a fantasy.
That's right.
You know what I mean? But how can you have parts of it, et cetera? So you really have to communicate, understand, and negotiate with mm-hmm. yourself before you even go to someone else.
Because I know that the fantasies can be so outrageous that you
just can't do them.
You can't do them.
And even if it's something that you can do, say, for instance, I have a new slave, female.
Mm-hmm.
She loves flogging and whipping, single tail, everything. She can take it. She loves it.
Mm-hmm.
But her body is not designed for it.
Exactly.
Because of her skin, you know, it will leave marks that will not go away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, kiddo, as much as you like this, this is something you're not going to be able to do.
Exactly, exactly.
You know?
And just like in the more vanilla realm, I know of guys who, you know, constantly say they want 8 inches or more, and physically they can't take it.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, so this remains a fantasy.
Right. So it's like she has to understand that, and through education and knowing, should she go to someone else, if they are not responsible enough to respect that, she'll be able to take care of herself.
Yes.
Because even with this, in terms of this BDSM, which is the play and the physical thing, mm-hmm. and the DS aspect, which is dominant and submissive.
Yes.
Submissive is not synonymous with stupid.
No, it is not.
And that just worms my dog when people think that. You know, you hear the term submissive or the word slave, and you go, "Oh, dude, not me. I'm not, you know, stupid, or I'm not weak." And it has nothing to do with it.
No.
But unfortunately, due to what people are exposed to, that's what many people think.
How to change their minds, and it's only through education. And
that's how we
like
change
this.
Our minds about anything.
Yeah,
you know, information.
Yes.
You know, and hopefully the knowledge turns into wisdom. Because you can, you know a whole lot of things, but if you don't have the fortitude, I want to say balls.
You
I don't
can
know
say
that.
Balls.
Yeah. If you don't have the balls to follow it through, you might as well be stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
so
taking
it
that first
strength.
Step. And
yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And yeah, because because of upbringing, I think in many areas, you are afraid to act out your fantasies there.
Because of our upbringing, we are afraid to live, period.
You got it. You got it. We live, it's this repression stuff.
Exactly.
And psychologically, it can kill you.
Yeah, the whole selfish, unselfish thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you try to live your life according to your nature, what floats your boat, what blows your skirt up, what does it for you, if it's not the norm, if it's not what your parents think you should do, if it's not what your boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever thinks you should do, you're selfish.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't alter that. And that is just such a screwed up way we've been taught.
It is. It is.
Because it's actually the very opposite which brings you, you know, happiness and peace. So all this stuff about, you know, you have to be unselfish, that's just some crap somebody tell you to get you to do what they want you to do. That's the only time anybody gets mad at you anyway. If you don't do what they want you to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
Tell me, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you do this? What is this for you? The show and providing a forum for all these people to talk and share information and everything.
Because this is a gift, that to be able to come on the airwaves and have untold numbers of people listen to our people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not gay and lesbian. I mean, we have
anyone out of
bisexual, transgender, yes, and leather, and everybody who La Vie Boheme, as mm-hmm. he opened the show. Mm-hmm. That is what the Montrose means.
Mm-hmm.
It's the artistic. It's the different people, the people who are not comfortable in the suburban track.
Right.
And especially GLBT people. And leather people and teens.
What is GLBT?
Gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender.
Okay, that does. They just get longer.
It does. And then you can put in intersex. You can put in questioning. Mm-hmm. You can put in. How about different people?
Right.
Outside of the norm, and mm-hmm. and people who don't get to voice that.
Right.
That's the one thing about this radio station that I like, that they're giving us this time, mm-hmm. and I think it's very, very precious. That's why I've been here for 18 years.
I was about to ask you how long you've been doing this.
Yes,
now.
Well, 18 years in March, I will have been doing this show. The show was on the air 6 months before I started with it. And actually, it started out as a show at from 2 to 4 a.m. in the morning, and it was for gay men.
Mm-hmm.
Gay men who had come home from the bars and alone.
Okay.
And were feeling lonely. They could tune in,
mm-hmm.
and there were gay guys on the air who understood what they were going through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of this show, in 1987, 1988, and through 91, the big focus was coming out of the closet.
Mm-hmm.
The original producer of the show really talked about Harvey Milk and how Harvey Milk, first openly gay supervisor mm-hmm. in San Francisco, and his message to the masses mm-hmm. were, come out, that when they know us, all of these fears that they have will just melt away when they realize that they have been living next door to us all this time, that they have known us. And that's kind of the message I wanted to continue, mm-hmm. but not just for gay men. When I first became the producer, Christmas of 1991, I opened it up to lesbians, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, you know, it's gays and lesbians. There are women here, and they don't have a voice either.
Right.
They need to hear it. And then I got to thinking about it, and about 2 years later, I said, you know, we talk about GLBT, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, but it's mostly we're talking about gay and lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And the B and the T part is just there. But mm-hmm. they're not really represented, and they need to be represented. Mm-hmm. And I actively sought out a bisexual man
mm-hmm.
and transgendered woman
mm-hmm.
to bring their voice.
Okay.
Because my focus was, from the very beginning when I produced this show, I have a lesbian here because I can talk about lesbian issues, but I ain't one. And it just isn't going to come through,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, when you have an actual lesbian talking about.
Right, right.
And then the same thing applied with transgender mm-hmm. and bisexual. We've got to get those people
mm-hmm,
on.
Mm-hmm.
And then that expanded. Excuse me. It was important for me to get the teen voice
mm-hmm.
of the question of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender questioning teen voice on here, and I worked with Hatch for a year.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
And then I thought, okay, where else can we go? You know, it bothered me that the black community, GLBT community, was so excuse me, something caught my throat, was so separated from the white community, and I said, we need a black voice here. So I started that segment, and then I looked around Houston, and it's, you know, we have come to the point where there is no majority anymore. No one group is a majority.
Right,
because,
right.
Because the Hispanic population has grown so much that this is not just a white community. So we need Hispanic voice, and I could see that happening in the Hispanic community also,
right.
That they were separating themselves, the GLBT, and I wanted to get that voice on. I haven't been always successful in that area. Then I wanted leather also, because that was always, the BDSM community had always been kind of the stepchild in the GLBT community. You know, I remember in the early days of AIDS, back in 1981, when it first started, the summer of 1981, in the early years, I know what the preppy white community was thinking at that time, because it was like, oh, that, I see that only in the leather community.
All right.
Because those are the people that fell first. And the upwardly mobile preppies were saying, oh, that's just those leather people. It doesn't affect me.
Right.
And then when it did affect me, I started getting involved in my community. And then I realized the error of my thinking. And how that it's not them, it's us.
Always.
It's always. Us. It's us, and we all need to be out there. And people have asked me, why did I get involved in ACT UP? Why did I start talking about being HIV positive on the air? And why did I keep talking about being gay? And I said, you know, I will do that until I don't have to.
Well, unfortunately, I think it's going to be a while.
It's going to be a while. That's right. Yeah. After Hours is going to go on for many, many years, because I don't see a point in my lifetime where we will be fully integrated into society like in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
In the Netherlands, where it doesn't matter. There is no gay area because it's not needed.
Exactly.
That gay relationships are treasured as much as straight relationships.
Any relationship where there are two people who are looking in the same direction as opposed to each other.
That's right. And it's so there's so few areas in that country where you can't you don't feel comfortable telling your parents or your friends there. You know, you come out as you mature. And it's not looked on as being something sick and dirty. It's just part of life.
Well, this is pretty much the only country that is this to the left.
I know.
Which is amazing.
We think we're so with it. But when we look at other countries, like the Netherlands, and we look at other countries, even Spain now is introducing gay marriage. And
Great Britain now.
That's
right. Elton John's getting married next month.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And every country that is an ally to us has allowed gays in the military, and there's not been a problem.
We've allowed them in there.
Of course we do. You know, but we still are hiding behind this don't ask, don't tell thing. And I want to see a time in this country where there will be no lawsuits.
I can't imagine it happening.
Because somebody has said you're gay.
I cannot imagine it happening under the system that exists today.
Yes.
You know, we really have to go back and pay attention to what's-his-name's prediction as to the terrible things that can happen when church and state get together.
Yes.
Yes. You know, really kind of dependent upon your church.
And I have to say, I've seen the steps backwards that we've taken ever since Bush has been in office. And how things have tensed up. Slowly but surely, people are, you know, going to the right, and all of a sudden we're weird again. When, you know, we were making such progress. And so this show is more important than ever to keep getting that word out. And I'll tell you, in the years that I've done this show, I've had the most comments from the straight community, because about half of this audience is straight. They're listening in because, you know, there's what else is there to listen to?
Oh, is anybody calling in? I see lights. I see pretty red lights.
Because we never give out the number. It's 713-526-5738. And if they've been listening for the past couple of weeks, they should know that by heart, because we just have been through our membership drive.
Ah.
And so they were hearing JMKPFT. 713-526-5738. Yes, you can call us at this hour. But it is the straight community. Mm-hmm. And the most comments I've had from them is from the transgender segment and the leather segment. Those are the two things that they have been, that have never touched their lives, so it would seem. Transgenders, and then after that would be the bisexual. And I've heard from more people who have realized their own bisexuality since they've been listening to this show. Because they allowed themselves to do it.
Right, right.
They realized the repression that we started off talking about. And I personally have known people who I knew were interested. They wanted to be a part of the BDSM life. And I've pushed them in that direction. And I feel good about it.
Oh, right.
Because they became their own person.
That's what it's all about. You own your sex.
Yes.
Then you own yourself.
That's right.
Period.
And when we look, especially at church and state, the one way that they control is through our sexuality.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, if anybody knows you control the sex, you control the person, it's me.
That's right.
So I know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know? But like we were talking before, I do think that this is the homosexuality of the 50s. And I think everyone is bisexual. That's just me.
To some degree, you look at you look at Kinsey's scale. You know, very few are zeros, very few are sixes, and everybody else is in the middle.
Exactly. And everybody has a fetish. Okay, we have, we have Chris waving his hands like crazy.
What happened?
In the booth. What a sigh.
Unfortunately, the mental patient on line one hung up.
Okay, we had a mental patient.
Who?
Was it deep?
I got a feeling it's probably doctors, whoever. who wanted to inform us that with discussions like this, we are abusing children.
What?
He's going to contact the authorities and see that we are off the air.
Okay.
Oh, good, good.
So,
everyone has to have a mission.
Yes.
Whoever you were on line one, FCC you, okay? we're not talking about...
The management of the station has defended this show for 18 years, and I don't see them changing their minds anytime soon.
The simple fact is...
We're abusing children?
How are we abusing children?
I don't know. He hung up before... before I just happened to step out to see who it was, and he hung up before I was able to get a hold of the phone.
Oh, he may have been talking about what I was talking about, what I did when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
As all kids do.
Yeah.
There's a cowboy, there's an Indian, somebody gets tied up, somebody gets shot between the eyes with a suction gun.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
Can we have this guy call back and debate him on air?
Yeah, that would be interesting, but you know, I don't like having battles of wits with unarmed people.
I know, it is. It is definitely a waste of time.
As the resident child on the show.
I did mention that I was about 10 at the time.
Yes.
Unfortunately,
right.
You know, that's one thing I think we get with this show, especially since the fact we spent an hour earlier talking about our youth group, and normally they're here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, you get these sensational things. You hear the priest pedophile thing.
Yeah, well, you come in the middle of a conversation, yeah. So, you know.
I was watching MSNBC earlier today. Mm-hmm. They were showing one of their child predator, you know, one of their local stations did the child predator thing where they go online, "Hi, I'm Cindy, I'm 14, and all the pervos click on it.
Yeah.
Well, finally, they decided to come to the gay men pervos, and they posed as a 14-year-old boy, and they had this guy who was a school teacher out in some school, and they set this guy up well, you know, told him all this stuff. He said, "Well, if you bring me beer, you know, come over to my house, I'll be home alone, just bring some beer." And then they have this other little part they say they use as a kind of a trap to really make show intent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can just show up at the house and, you know, I was just here to tell this boy he shouldn't be doing these sorts of things, blah, blah, blah. So they had this thing telling him, saying, "The garage is open. Go in, strip down to your underwear, and come in."
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher goes, "Well, I don't wear underwear." So, well, just come in naked. And so the reveal of the interviewer coming out, he's handing him a towel. There's this naked 29-year-old school teacher sitting on a bar stool in some kid, in quote unquote kid's kitchen, with a 6-pack of beer, and you know he's sitting there going, "I didn't do, I just."
I've never done this before.
Yeah. But, you know, there's this sensitivity. Everyone jumps on these stories in the news. Yeah. Of, you know, we're these child predators, you know.
No, we're not talking gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender here. We're talking about pedophilia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
and that is very different.
That is one thing that I think should be punishable by death. Everything else, I think, is just totally ridiculous. If, you know, somebody goes in a store and shoots somebody in a robbery, oh, that's really messed up. But I don't think you should kill them. I think you should make them work to frickin' death for 50 years. You know what I mean? But
yes.
Rape, because there are too many women and men out here giving it up out of both draw legs.
Yes.
You really don't have to go there. And any type of abuse of a child.
Yes.
That I do think is punishable by death.
And the fact of, you know, saying that we, you know, this show, we, you know, we have to self-censor and we be careful and we, you know, we look at this stuff because we know how things are going to be interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
You know what I think is horrible? This teacher from wherever it was, woman.
In Georgia?
Georgia.
With
who had sex with her 14-year-old boy.
Yeah.
You know what?
Her punishment? Probation.
Oh, because she was
Florida.
She was too cute to do time.
Right. Oh, yeah, okay.
That's what the lawyer said.
Oh, if that
she
had
was
been
too attractive and okay. It was dangerous for
had
her
that
to go
been
to jail.
Had that been a man molesting that 14-year-old boy?
Baby,
or
if
had that,
that had been me, they would be pumping sunlight to my butt. Okay?
Okay. Hold on a second. Let's give background to that, because now I realize I wasn't talking the Georgia case. He was talking the Florida case. This one happened about a year ago. We talked about it a lot because there was this other talk show host here in Houston that kept making the comment of, you know, she's hot.
You're talking about the one that was just on
in Florida. This is the Florida case. What we're talking about is the fact she was fooling around with a 14-year-old student, and some of the times when she was fooling around with him, it was in the back seat of her SUV while the kid's 15-year-old cousin was driving.
Mm-hmm.
And she was having sex with him. And it was the cousin who squealed on him.
Right, right.
So it went to trial, and part of it was the fact, you know, she was too pretty and all that, but the victim's, the alleged victim's mother,
mm-hmm.
Agreed to probation because she didn't want to put her son through all the stuff of the trial. She wanted to get it over and done with, so she agreed to the probation. is how that came with.
Well, if the cousins, let me see.
I think the cousin was just jealous he didn't get.
That's what I'm talking about. Sounds pretty consensual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, come on now. Kids today are really, really grown. And you have, you know, like 13 up, you got females having kids. You're hearing so much about this older woman, young man thing. But look at what they are subjected to. Advertisement. Videos, video games, movies. How the hell do you expect a child to be a child?
And you got Britney Spears coming out in her version of a Catholic schoolgirl outfit.
Oh, come on now.
And then running off to Vegas and getting married for 48 hours.
Christina Aguilera got better dominatrix outfits than I do.
The thing with this case that blew my mind, and the conservative talk radio host that I listen to every day, it really irks them and me that had this been a man and a 14-year-old girl, he would go to prison.
Yep. Yeah.
Had this been a man and a 14-year-old boy, he would have gone to prison for longer.
Yes.
But because it is a woman, and women are not viewed as sexual predators, even though this one obviously was, because it doesn't matter how consenting a 14-year-old is, a 14-year-old cannot make those decisions.
Well, the thing is this.
I was making them.
In Georgia and Delaware, within the past couple of years, the age of consent for sexual relations was 13.
Mm-hmm.
As long
as 12 in Utah?
No, for most places it's 18. But see, they like Delaware had a rule that, you know, it's okay as long as you can prove you weren't the first one. If you were fooling around with a 13-year-old, if you can prove that you weren't the first one to have sex with her, it was legal.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, that's weird, isn't it?
So basically, you know, Your Honor, yeah, she's a slut. That's,
oh, brother.
And that's the straight defense. You know, you've got the case we talked about last week out of Georgia. The 37-year-old woman who got married to her 15-year-old lover.
The Luterno?
No, that's not, it's kind of a Luterno thing. That was years ago. This is what just happened. She got married to her 15-year-old because he knocked her up.
Yeah.
And under Georgia law, you have to be under 18, you have to get parental permission unless you knocked up the girl. And then it's basically an anti-bastard loophole they have in there.
Why don't they have an anti-stupid law?
So, and this is the funny part about it. Is her lawyer, she's been fooling around with this kid for 2 years, since he was 13. Her lawyer is arguing that spousal privilege, so the boy can't testify against her.
Because they're married.
Because now they're married legally. But here's the thing. For her to go into court and say, yes, we have spousal privilege, she has to prove they're married. The reason why they're married is because he knocked her up. I think that constitutes the fact that there was a proof of relationship. It doesn't matter if you fooled around one or 100 times.
No.
You know, it's still...
Yes. But then you come to this age of consent thing. And we've talked about this before. I know people who are 15 years old who are sexually mature and psychologically mature enough to make these decisions.
There are some 59-year-olds that shouldn't have
that
to make any freaking decisions.
I got a brother who just turned 30.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So it really is not an age thing.
No, it
isn't. You know what I mean?
I'm about to turn 18 in 6 days.
Woo!
But, like, the thing is...
And would we just fall flat on our faces if the walls of your bedroom would talk to us right now?
Okay. Whoa.
Okay.
But the thing is, I mean, society sets up standards. Like, I can vote next Thursday, which is exciting. But I have been intelligent enough to vote for several years now.
Exactly.
But the thing is...
Point.
Right. Well, the thing is, we just have to take these... We have to start it somewhere. And in my opinion, 18, you know, at 18 you're smart enough.
Well, okay, let me ask you this. At what age did you begin to be sexually active?
14.
Was it wrong?
I regret it.
Why?
Well, it was with a much older person.
Okay.
And
if it had been with a person your age?
Oh, no, I probably wouldn't regret it, no.
Why would you... Because I had that same experience, okay? I was with someone much older than I. And for a long time, I was angry about it. However, because he was older, I learned a lot of things. You know, a lot of ways to take care of myself, to protect myself. And he did not psychologically, maybe because I didn't know a lot of what was going on, but he still took care. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So was your experience like really not good?
No, it was at the time I thought it was great.
Okay, so why is it not great in retrospect? Just because he was older?
I don't think that it was a healthy relationship.
You weren't ready for it?
Right. I mean, being that I was in middle school and he was, you know, 28, that just doesn't work. I mean, I won't date anyone out of high school right now because I just don't, I can't see it working.
Okay.
Okay.
I think there are two... There are maturity levels, and granted, I was more mature than 14, but not nearly 28.
Okay. I can understand that.
Yeah.
You know, when we've talked about this kind of topic before, the one question that I've always asked about it, and it was theirs, I would love to know what the law, what the people out there who write the laws and enforce the laws and all that, what is that magic thing that happens at midnight, from the midnight starting your 16th birthday, that all of a sudden you're able to drive a car? What angel from on high comes down and touches you on the shoulder when you're sleeping at midnight on your 18th birthday that says you have the wisdom to vote? You have the wisdom to serve our military. You have the wisdom to go out and have sex.
There has to be it. It's arbitrary, of course, but there has to be something.
Our only other decision is an IQ test. And obviously half the people voting right now couldn't pass an IQ test if they had to.
Well, of course not.
Well, okay, no. I understand you have to start somewhere. Okay, say you start somewhere. But, you know, how about a little yin with the yang? Can you take the driver's license away from them when they get 75? You know what I mean? You can it, but you won't take it away from the person who's even probably more dangerous on the road than the 16-year-old.
Well, you know, some states, and I think Texas is one of them, has initiated after a certain age you have to take a driver's test every couple of years.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Yes.
I think that is a great thing because I don't think it's an. It should be an automatic cutoff. Some people say, at 80 at 85, they should just take it away. No, my grandmother's 80, and she's a better driver than a lot of the people I deal with every day.
Well, my grandmother didn't start driving until she was 50.
It's all about discretion.
Yeah,
she did not get her driver's license until she was mid to late 50s.
You go, girl.
That's right.
Well, she had no need to. She lived with her parents till she was 18. She left there. She married my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
They lived in a small town. So if she needed to go to the grocery store, my grandfather took her to the store. If she wanted to go out during the day, there's a weird thing they have up north, and even in small towns, it's called public transportation.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's an amazing concept.
Yeah. You
know, a big bus comes and picks up people and takes them at a regular route. And she would take that to go into town. And it wasn't till after my grandfather passed away that she didn't have that access.
Well, you know, in the 50s, it was a luxury to have two cars. Most families didn't have any car.
Yeah, I was about to say two cars.
Yeah. And if you had some mm-hmm. people had to have one mm-hmm. to get to work, and but it was one car.
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
husband, who was the breadwinner usually, took the car to work, and the wife was home taking care of the children.
Yeah. That's what we did then.
That's what we did then.
Yes.
And that's why many wives didn't drive.
And that's why women have gone totally blipty blur.
And yes, and it was certainly needed.
Yeah.
And necessary. And we got into the age where more women worked, and we had to have two-car families. And here we are.
Yeah, and where is that?
I don't know. We're on our way to somewhere. We haven't arrived yet.
I know.
Yet.
You know, I think about that, you know.
But do we ever arrive? I mean,
it's a journey. It's not an event.
It's a journey, and we're always evolving.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But not wanting to sound old-fashioned or a sticky wicket, because certainly I'm not. But I think how in the 50s, more women were home.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that they were home because it was supposedly their place, you know, and their job. So now many, many more in the workforce, and you've got this, what do you call them, latchkey
generation. Kids, yes.
Yeah. I'm not so sure I think that's a good thing.
No,
but who
it
the
isn't.
Heck stays home with them? But
that's
you
right.
have this whole generation of kids coming up, and their biggest and most significant relationship is with a computer mm-hmm. or a joystick.
Yeah. Now, what's that about?
I don't know.
There's a lack of human touch there.
I think that I saw this going this way, and that's why I never wanted to do kids. People say, do you have kids?
No.
I don't do Windows or children. I figured if I could give birth...
I'm with you on that.
...to an 18-year-old with a jog, a Uzi, and please do not hurt me tattooed on their forehead, then I would have one. And it has to come with a retroactive birth control pill in case it didn't work. But anyway, just the way things are.
It just did not fit your life.
My face is just...
I mean that.
A job, an Uzi.
And please do not hurt me.
Yes.
Tattooed on their forehead.
And a retroactive
birth control pill just in case.
Okay.
I believe in time travel abortion, but honestly.
Oh,
I think when we got these trouble people, you know, let's go back a generation, knock out the parents too.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway,
but, you know,
education once again.
Where were we going with this?
I haven't a clue.
Oh yeah,
this is why we didn't even start the show early. We've been
yes, I know.
Kind of kibitzing. But anyway, you are listening to KPFT.
Yes. Do you have to look up the letters for that?
Yes.
Yeah, well.
But, you know, you have no idea how many times I've said, oh, yeah, KPTF.
Keep playing fag tunes.
All right. I will not forget that again. And that number, if you want to give us a call, is 713-526-5738.
Did you have a fag tune you wanted to play?
No, because we're getting too close to the end. I figured I'd wrap out.
I would like to remind everyone to go vote. There's a runoff.
Absolutely.
There's a homosexual in the runoff.
Yes.
Her name is Sue Lovell. She's running for city council at large, position 2. That means citywide. If you
but
live,
we don't just vote because she's a homosexual.
Well, no.
No.
But this is a gay show. I just thought, you know,
we vote for her because she's been in politics all of her life, and she knows she knows how to do it.
It's just a bonus. She's a lesbian.
Oh, okay, cool.
The runoff is December 10th. Early vote starts November 30th.
Because I was just going to say, remember, what's his face, Brown? Do you believe he's going to be a consultant for what to do in a freaking emergency?
Michael Brown, former FEMA director.
Come on.
Is he gay?
Come on.
No.
He's just stupid. You know what I mean?
You know, Joshua is here. He hasn't been here in several weeks. And the last time he was here, he was talking about his father was putting out a book. Remember that?
No, not really.
And it's happened. His father has put out the book. And I wanted to talk with him, but it's getting right to the end of the show.
Well, where is he?
He's out in the lobby.
Joshua, come on in here.
He was the one being debriefed in the library.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear.
What's the matter, Twinkie? It took you a while to realize that.
Hello, Joshua. Last time you were here, you were talking about your dad had put out a book.
Yes, he did.
And I had really... Let's talk about that again. What's the book about? And
well, if I'm going to try to sum it up very quickly, it's kind of halfway between metaphysics, philosophy, self-help, and kind of a self-improvement kind of thing. You know.
Well, since it's out, it must have a title.
Dark Arts of Immortality, Transformation Through War, Sex, and Magic.
Okay, let's go through that one more time.
Slower.
Yeah.
The Dark Arts of Immortality.
Dark Arts. Arts of Immortality.
Transformation Through War, Sex, and Magic.
War, Sex, and Magic?
And the author.
It's basically, it's
What's his name? Is it under your dad?
Ross Schott, Schott.
Okay. And
it can be found on Borders, Amazon, or Author House.
Okay. I like the title.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds kind of rough and dark, but really the crux of it is, you know, is mentally, physically, and emotionally being the best you are and just being who you are, whether that's Christian or gay or straight.
I am so all for that. Sometimes I have to beat that concept into people, but, you know.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, being able to be who you are.
Yes.
Be the best at who you are without necessarily having to confine yourself to all those rules and regulations. Or finding
the
way
art of
to be who you are. The art of being able to be who you are and the best of who you are. And still be able to function in those kind of paradigms.
And that's what I wanted you to talk about, because that is what this show is about.
That is what BDSM is about.
I remember a program director here who confessed that after listening to After Hours, he came out of the closet. And I said, "You're gay?" He said, "No." He said, "I'm coming out of the closet about being an actor."
All right.
Because I have been afraid to tell people that I am an actor because of what they may think about me.
Yeah.
And he said, "I'm proud of it."
Absolutely.
I've done a lot of good things in that field, and it's just coming out as what you are and who you are and stop the repression.
It's being true to our own natures.
Yes. Yes.
That's the bottom line.
Right.
That's what it's about.
And of course, there's more to the book, and there's a whole lot of different tangents, and he ties it all in. It has to do with, you know, he ties in history, he ties in religion, he ties in metaphysics.
Mm-hmm.
But the real bottom line of it is learning from all those things and piece them together to where you figure out who you are yourself and how to express that within or not within, you know, controls and systems and religions and governments.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Hmm.
Ross Schott.
Schott.
Will you write that down for me?
I will.
Excellent. Yeah.
And you can find them on, like I said, Amazon.
Yeah, I'll go to Amazon.
Or Borders, or the official publisher site is authorhouse.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And on Amazon, he reached as high as 2% in sales. And the top 2% of books sold on Amazon.
Excellent.
And it's only been only for 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay.
And it's already reached top 2%.
That's nice.
Very nice.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Not bad for trying to pull it together after all that turkey.
I'm hearing.
Stuffing.
Yeah, I know.
And cranberry sauce.
And the tryptophan.
All right.
Yes.
This is Mistress Max Rules. Going back home now. And I will see you next month. Everyone, have a good holiday. Be safe and well. And whatever it is, be yourself.
Yes. Jimmy Carper here. And I will not be here next
week. You have been listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Addit.
That's it. Oh, that's it, huh? No, I will not be here next week because I've got a friend coming in. We do an annual thing.
Next
week.
Oh, okay.
Dickens on the Strand.
All
it's
right.
always the first weekend in December in Galveston, and we dress up and we do it. And
oh, yes.
Yeah, I like doing that. It's been a tradition with us for well over 20 years. And he's given me the high sign. That means we're going away. So, bye, Joshua. Thank you.
No problem.
Have been listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT.
Don't forget to check out our sister program, Queer Voices, every Monday night, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. We'd love to hear from you, our listeners. We want your story ideas, discussion topics, event announcements, love mail, hate mail,
dirty pictures!
And there are two ways to get it to us.
Snail mail is After Hours, care of KPFT 90.1 FM, 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006.
Our email address is afterhours@kpft.org. If you missed a show or want to share a part of a show with a friend, check out our online archive at kpftarchive.org.
We will be back next week, and hopefully you will be able to join us. On behalf of the crew of After Hours, good night and have a great week.
This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free, Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT 90.1 FM Houston and 89.5 FM Galveston. You can always find us on the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
When you listen to KPFT, you hear things that you would expect to hear on a community radio station. Relevant news, the arts, great music.
But when you tune into KPFT, you also hear things you wouldn't expect. You hear different perspectives that make you think about our world in a new way.
Pacifica's mission statement is about building understanding between nations and people. What you hear on KPFT can have a profound